this. It's Tony Martin and Tony Wilson still sitting in the Giel-shaped chairs tonight. Your hosts for evenings on 774. And Tony, I've been referring to you and your dad erroneously all day on the ABC as kind of a miniature version of the Ablets. Is that wrong?
It's such a wildly inaccurate statement. It's ridiculous. I've been talking to you all day about what a beautiful Brownlow that this is, what it represents in terms of someone fulfilling the huge shadow that was put out there by the father. Mm. We're talking about shadows. We're talking about fulfilling those shadows and measuring up to a very high-achieving parent.
We're going to be meeting a lot of people with high-achieving parents tonight, and also we're going to have a nihilist on the program. Ed Nimavola's here, as is the bedroom philosopher. It's all coming up over the next 3 hours. But next, the news. I think you'll find...
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right. It's time to play Giel or No Giel. Once again, it's No Giel. Tony Martin and Tony Wilson here in the Giel shape. Cheers. Now, before we get to our nonsensical business, I think we have what's described as a severe weather warning. Tony, put on your severest voice if you could.
Severe weather warning for flash flooding for people in the north central, northern country, Wimmera, Mallee, Alpine areas, East Gippsland and northeast forecast districts. The situation, a low pressure system over South Australia, will move over northern Victoria tonight before moving to the east of Victoria Wednesday morning and deepening. Heavy rain and isolated thunderstorms, which may lead to flash flooding, is forecast for the north central, northern country, the Wimmera, Mallee, Alpine areas, East Gippsland and northeast forecast districts. That's during Tuesday night and Wednesday. General falls 25 to 50 mil are likely. Wow. That's wash away situations. The SES advising people should not drive, ride or walk through flood water, to keep clear of creeks and storm drains. And for emergency help in floods and storms, ring your local SES unit on 132 500.
Our friends at the Bureau just sitting back laughing at that report. Amateur hour.
Well, I think the thing they would have picked up on is that I doubled up on the regions.
Oh.
I said it twice, effectively. But I didn't want them to miss out on their place being mentioned.
No, good on you.
And whilst there's flooding in parts of the state, have you noticed that there's an earthquake in another part of the state?
Is there really?
Yeah. Oh, earthquake might be a big call, but the people of Frankston are just bombarding the SMS with earthquake, two jolts in Langwarrin. Earth tremor felt in Frankston, felt larger than the one a few months ago.
Wow.
I felt the ground shake in Hampton Park, a tremor maybe? That's what Mark's thinking.
Wow, so many regions broadcasting in sense around tonight. Around the state, we'll have all your earthquake and flood information as it comes to hand. Don't panic, listeners. Or listener, pardon me, still getting the hang of things here at the 774 desk. I'm using my politest ABC voice. I think that's got to be points. Have you noticed that?
You don't have any of that kind of crass dropping of G's and chatty round the barbecue style. I think you've got, you are on the way to being a Giel yourself.
Yeah, I'm not doing any of my usual off mic shouting as I would on less reputable networks.
You'll be in close whispering soon. That's the ultimate.
Certainly will. I'll be throwing to...
This Thursday, ABC Classic FM are presenting the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra.
Yes.
That's the opposite of your old shout. It's in close whispering.
The cast of Sea Change will be reforming to present the work of... I've forgotten the name of that bloke from Gardening Australia. Already, how quick we forget...
Can I tell you how beautiful last night's Brownlow's was?
I've been hedging. You can feel me sort of working towards it slowly. The Brownlow, singular.
We had to teach you yesterday that it wasn't called the Brownlow's.
No. Did you tape it? Did you get home and watch it?
I did get home, and it was quite a moving moment, because you have to picture that young bald man of, I think he's 26 now.
Yeah, right. Now, as I understand it, Matt Lucas from Little Britain won the Brownlow. Is that right? That's what it looked like on the front of the Herald Sun. Oh, sorry, the small paper this morning.
He was raised in an environment where he couldn't possibly live up. I mean, in a footballing sense, live up to his father. His father is the most extraordinary talent to have ever played the game. So he grows up in that situation with that shadow. And then last night he stands there as three times in a row voted the best player in the competition by the other players. Mm. And now he's won the highest honour that his dad never won. He's already won a premiership, which his dad never won. So it's now like his dad still is the ultimate genius. But this guy has sort of out-achieved him in measurable terms.
Right, now that's what we're talking about tonight. Now what I want you to do is I want you to now compare that to your own situation.
Because you've been trying to, Jimmy, the Ray Wilson who played football for Hawthorn.
Well, it's quite a coincidence, don't you think, that this has happened last night and now you're on.
And I failed to live up to the bar that my father set as a premiership player at Hawthorn. I went through and became a reserve grade player at Hawthorn.
Right.
And I think that's probably the more common scenario, that a parent sets a mark in a field and a child, a daughter or a son, will strive to reach that mark and usually fall short.
Now, I've been trying to think of a comparison from the world of movies for this, and you say that I'm not getting one, because I'm saying Jason Reitman. Because you had Ivan Reitman, of course.
Stripes.
He directed Stripes. He was a producer on films like Animal House. He directed Ghostbusters.
He's a great achiever in movies, but he wouldn't be regarded as one of the great greats of all time.
He wouldn't be. He's the greats in a certain kind of genre, the Stripes, Ghostbusters kind of genre. But then, and he's sort of gone slightly down the tubes lately with My Super Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah.
But then his son, Jason Reitman, directed a film. It wasn't a bad film called Thank You for Smoking. And then next film was Juno, got nominated for Best Picture Oscar. Just done his third film called Up in the Air with George Clooney, which is now the favourite to win the Oscar for Best Picture next year.
So that would be an example of outstripping, really, almost.
If he wins the Oscar for Best Picture, he will have outstripped his father, the auteur of Stripes. So is that a comparison to the Abbotts?
That is quite a good comparison.
Does that work?
Francis Ford, is it Coppola?
Coppola. I think.
Sophia had a good film, didn't she? That might have been nominated for an Academy Award, wasn't it?
She was up for Best Picture, but she hasn't really done anything
since.
As good as The Godfather or Apocalypse Now.
No, that's true. She's not going to strip.
But it could be said she has done a film better than Jack with Robin Williams.
Is that one of Francis's? Not one of his best?
That was when he was spending more time making wine than films.
We're really looking through all the endeavours of life, and we want you to share them with us as well. Maybe living up to your own parents. Do you have a reputation do you have a shadow that was cast by a parent that you've had to try and live up to? Even at the show today, I believe, was it a mother-daughter team? Won an olive oil.
That's right. The Victorian Olive Oil Trophy at the Royal Melbourne Show was won by Joan McGovern and Anne Rathjen. I hope that's how you pronounce her name. Won the championship trophy. I didn't realise it was such a fortly contested area, the olive oil caper.
No, I didn't either.
Then you've got this piece of information just received. Mao Zedong's grandson is now China's major general. The major general of the nation's army. Do you think he would have had connections?
It's possibly a surname that's helped him through.
Possibly.
While they're still not holding the cultural revolution against him, they're going to wait a little while longer. Is it a new promotion there? Mao Zedong's grandson? 39-year-old is now the youngest general in the People's Liberation Army. So I think it is helping him along a little. But we do want your own parental pressure, not parental pressure, but I guess parental shadow that was cast.
Yeah, and how you sort of had to live up to it and possibly overshadowed your parents. I mean, I had one with, obviously I inherited the genetic disorder hemochromatosis from my dad. And what a triumphant day, the day my iron levels came in and were higher than his. Cop that, Dad!
It sounds like you've got him covered now.
We're getting SMSs, people saying, what about Kirk and Michael Douglas? And, of course, isn't there a third... Well, who was the bloke recently Was it Stephen Douglas?
Is that the grandson of Kirk?
Someone's nodding in there. Yeah, it was the other son that didn't do as well and had a terrible career in stand-up comedy. And the story is that he was playing the Comedy Store in London, Kirk Douglas's son, and he was bombing really badly. And he said to the audience, "Don't you know who I am? I'm Kirk Douglas's son." And someone stood up in the audience and went, "No, I'm Kirk Douglas's son." And then everybody got into it. What about Goldie Hawn and Kate Hudson? Judy Garland set a standard Liza Minnelli struggled to live up to. I'm not sure if that's in singing or consumption of barbiturates, but thank you for that contribution.
But is Liza Minnelli in Cabaret, is that a better movie than anything that's Judy Garland? Judy Garland obviously had more hit movies.
Well, she was
a better singer.
The Wizard of Oz and Easter Parade. I mean, Meet Me in St. Louis. I mean, Cabaret is a very good film, but
it's probably quite hard to. Yeah, you're right.
We need, obviously, if a gay man could call us up and give us a definitive answer to that question.
In the world of politics, George W. Bush obviously got to be U.S. president after George Bush Sr. is quite an obvious one.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have thought he lived up to his father.
No.
He only got two terms. His dad only got one term. That would have been a very happy election night, wouldn't it?
No, but I think the second George Bush produced a lot of better comedy sketches. If you compare the comedy sketches that came out of the first George Bush and the second one comes out on top.
Kim Beazley Jr., leader of the ALP, probably went closer to the... I don't think Kim Beazley Sr. was ever leader of the ALP, was he? He was a minister. But so Kim Beazley, to some measure, outachieved Kim Beazley Sr.
The SMSs are going nuts. The Sheens, the Barrymores, the Stillers, Ben and Jerry Stiller. These are all great. Let's have some music and then let's talk to the callers. We want to hear your story. Did you live up to... was a standard set by your own parents? Did you overtake them in some area? And if you don't have a story like that, we will just accept examples. We will just accept a list. The number to call, I believe, is still 1-300-222-774. In the meantime, here's the Isley Brothers with It's Your Thing.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The track just before was, of course, It's Your Thing, which opens the very fine Steven Soderbergh film Out of Sight with George Clooney. Myself and Tony Wilson are asking, have you lived up to your parents' reputation? Have you exceeded your parents' reputation, Ablett style? You come up with a great one during the song there, Tony. Do you want to say what it was?
Carl Williams.
I think he did it. I think he achieved it.
George Williams, of course, just kicking around as a petty crim around town.
Hmm.
But Carl, you know, just really flexed his muscles.
Won a Logie, I think, possibly, at one point. We have some callers. Ian from Fairfield, do you want to tell us your story?
Well, look, this is not my story personally. I'm not in this class.
No.
But how's this for a family? In, going back a bit here, 1903, husband and wife Marie and Pierre Curie win the Nobel Prize in Physics.
Yep.
And then in 1911... Marie Curie wins a Nobel Prize in chemistry, and then in 1935, their daughter Irene and her husband Frederick, and she was Joliot Curie, he was just Frederick Joliot, they win another Nobel Prize in chemistry.
Wow.
That's very impressive. There were so much fewer nominees in those days, of course. But no, it's very impressive.
And what did Irene do? Because obviously Marie and Pierre get some press, but was Irene's discovery quite significant?
He's gone, is it?
Oh, yeah, I guess it is pretty. You have to be absolutely outstanding, leading in your field. I mean, this is the sort of thing won by people like Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
One of the nice things about it, and maybe another listener might correct me if I'm wrong, but besides a nice speech and you probably get a diploma and stuff like that from the Academy of Physics in Stockholm, you get a cheque for about $1 million.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I've seen that photo of Einstein getting the giant cheque.
Yeah, I have.
He's very good, Einstein.
His hair just coming over the top of the cheque, that's all you could see.
He performed poorly in the evening wear section, though, if I remember it. Thank you, Ian. That's a very good example. 1-300-222-774 is the number to call if you'd like to contribute to this occasionally idiotic discussion. SMSs on 1-9-7-7-4-7-7-4. We've had, just give us some of those SMSs, Tone.
My friend used to always win the sponge cake and yo-yo baking competitions at the Royal Melbourne Show, and then when his daughter was 8, she entered at her father's encouragement and beat him. He never entered again. That's what we want.
That's the kind of thing we're chasing. Martin says, my father and I worked for a major bank for a total of 46 years. Dad did 42 of those years, but does it matter if I followed in his footsteps? I don't know. I had one of those where I found out that my granddad was a typesetter for 67 years, and I didn't know that when I did a bit of typesetting, or I worked in... with typesetters, really, not actually doing the setting myself, for a year and a half. That's very poor. I fell short of his record by 65 and a half years.
Just think of the knowledge he could have shared with you. And he could have done your typesetting in his sleep, presumably.
That's right. He was font happy, that man. We have Andrew from East Malvern on the line. Do you have a story for us, Andrew?
I don't have a story so much, but I think, as you've probably just touched on a little bit, the other way of looking at it is in terms of all those thousands and probably millions of people out there that are living their dreams through their children.
Yeah, that's
right. In terms of people who are probably good reserves footballers, VFL footballers or amateur footballers, but their sons and daughters went on to greater heights.
It's true. It does sometimes happen the other way. Like, I know Bull Richardson played for Richmond, quite a good player, played in premierships, but his son, Matthew Richardson, one of the best players of the last 20 years.
Well, Matthew Scarlett's the other example, obviously.
Very good. Yep, excellent. We'll turn this into an AFL segment, and I just see Tony Martin, who's almost back to full health, the colour has drained from his face.
Are you guys making up these names? Are you having a lend?
Wash over him. Thank you very much, Andrew, from East Malvern. We are talking about parental shadows and sons and daughters who can live up to those achievements and CV ticks, Gary Abbott being the one in the news over the last 24 hours. It was really, I was moved. I was moved, Tony, because of the difficulty of his, I imagine, of his teenage life.
The number to call is 1-300-222-774 if you've overshadowed your parents. I'm trying to think with my mum, interesting story. We were actually both expelled, me and my mum, from the same school by the same man.
Really?
Technically, because I was sort of expelled from school. It wasn't a proper expulsion. I actually took over publication of the school magazine because nobody else turned up for the meetings, basically. I was the only person at the meeting.
I was also editor of the school magazine.
Well, there's nobody else to do it. So I did the whole thing, drew all these cartoons and caricatures of various teachers, had the whole thing printed in Morrinsville in New Zealand, had 3,000 copies delivered to the school, and then just hell broke loose because I'd sort of caricatured various teachers. And there was one, the woodwork teacher, had a terrible accident in between me having drawn his picture and it being printed. He'd had a terrible accident while demonstrating the safest way to use his own lathe. And the cover of the magazine had the letter M from the logo for the magazine falling and plunging and skewering him in the head. So he felt that was a deliberate go at him. And there was so much complaint about the tone I'd struck in the magazine that it was kind of suggested that I might want to leave school early, sort of in a sort of Sopranos-ish kind of way, in a sort of things do break, Mr. Martin, kind of a way. And by the headmaster of the school, who was an ex-All Black. And then my mother worked in the office at the school, and 5 years after that, she was sacked by the same bloke.
Did she have a misdemeanor or anything was she trying to live up to your misdemeanor with the magazine?
I'm not allowed to talk about it on air, and I'm not even quite sure what the reason was for her sacking, but it was fairly controversial.
Right.
And then my mother at school, I never lived up to a standard she set for pranks at school, because my mum did this thing where, in the olden days, you would have the photo taken of the entire school in one go. So it would be like a class photo, but a really long one with 900 kids. And they'd have to take it in three sections. So they'd take the first section, everyone holds still, they take the second section, take the third section. While they were doing the second section, my mum, who'd been in the first section, ran round the back and got into the third section. So she ended up appearing in the school photo twice, like a ghost, like the end of The Shining.
Your mum's a hellraiser.
Yeah, well, that's the politest way to put it, sure.
In terms of living up to my mum, I've done some quiz show time on the Einstein Factors.
Yes.
I've done 6 years of doing a couple of episodes a year as a brains trustee on the ABC show The Einstein Factor. And I'm coming from some quiz pedigree because my mum was Miss Football 1969, 40 years ago this week.
Yeah,
she won the...
This is an incredible story.
They used to circle the faces of women in the crowd in the Sporting Globe, and the people who were circled would then go on to World of Sport and participate in a quiz, and it was kind of a knockout tournament, and they had it follow the format of the Final Four that was going on in the VFL at the same time. And so Mum basically was plucked out of the crowd and knew nothing about football. But there was a trip to Japan was the first prize. My parents had never been overseas.
Right.
And so Dad, who was playing league football, just set about...
Coaching her.
And so there were all over the house, there were lists of VFL presidents and leading goal kickers. It would be like teaching you the history of the game in 4 weeks in order to win a tournament.
I wonder if it could be done. Let's get your dad in here.
And, she ended up winning it and trip to Japan.
But she ended up being Miss Football.
Even though she was married at the time, but she was Miss Football 1969. And apparently the Lou and the boys on World of Sport were gambling on who was going to win each week. And
wow.
Yeah, and she was in a tie for 4 weeks in a row. They couldn't separate them.
Is there footage? Is there?
I've rung Channel 7 to try and track down the footage, but they had quite lax films.
It's been wiped over.
I think it all got taped over, which is crazy. Amazing stuff got taped over.
Tonight Live,
the 70s
Steve Izard episodes have gone over it all.
Yeah, it's very sad.
That's an incredible story, Tony.
So, yeah, quiz show pedigree.
Your mum was Miss... So, hang on. So, the three of you... You're all in the football caper. All right, that's a whole nother show in itself, but we have Dale from Bacchus Marsh on the line. Have you got a story for us, Dale?
Yes, mate. I was a grunt in the army in Townsville at the time, and my son went through Duntroon and ended up coming up there as my commanding officer.
Wow, what was that like?
I quit.
Did you?
It was just very awkward.
Did he abuse his position of power in any way?
Oh, no, not at all. It wasn't him. It was all the other boys just gave me a bit of grief.
Yeah,
too much
so
stirring.
I tried for a transfer, and when they didn't approve that, I ended up leaving. And he's still happily in the army and doing well.
And was there any scenes like in the movies, someone's always in a puddle doing push-ups? Did he ever order that his dad do a few push-ups in a puddle?
No, he's a bit higher than ordering push-ups.
Right, okay.
So he was just a bit above that, so he was my direct commanding officer. So,
well, that's quite a story. Thanks, Dale. 1-300-222-774 is the number to call. Living up to your parents, do you have a reputation that was created for you by a parent? We want to hear your story. SMS is quite a few coming through, Tony. What have we got?
My local mechanics are a father-son team, and the father can't service automatic transmissions.
Oh, right.
The son can. And this one is the Murdoch clan have been mentioned. How can you follow Rupert when he's basically achieved world domination?
That's right. He's still having children, I think, isn't he?
Yes.
Decided that the existing ones aren't up to scratch. I need to make some more. I know I'm 120 years old, but I will keep trying.
We've got a call from Bruce in Mount Waverley. Bruce?
G'day.
How are you?
Yeah, good. This is a story about the gorgeous Grace Kelly. I think it was her grandfather, was quite a good rower in America. Went across to compete against the best of the British, and they would let him compete because he was a commoner and they were snobs. But he didn't give in. He had a few children, and one of his sons was a very good rower, and he trained him up, and he went across there, and the Brits said, weren't quite so snobby, let him compete, and he won.
And that was Grace Kelly's grandfather?
I think so, as far as I can remember, yeah.
Wow. How do you know that, Bruce?
Oh, just a bit of useless information that I picked up somewhere.
Well, great. That's what we're looking for. We are your useless information connection tonight. Thank you very much, Bruce. We have Stephen from Edith Vale. Who would you like to mention, Stephen?
Well,
me and my old man were both non-achievers, right? So there's not a story there.
No.
But I like the story. I read Ian Chappell's book, and he talks about his grandfather, Vic Richardson, where he was like, he was the captain of South Australia in football, cricket, baseball, and football, cricket, baseball, yeah. And Ian Chappell never played football, so he only captained Australia in baseball and cricket. Oh, sorry, Anyway, and Vic Richardson, the grandfather, captained Australia in cricket, right? Now, the old man, his old man, Ian Chappell's father, he just played state cricket. So he didn't, you know, so he beat him there.
Is this all accurate information?
It's from Ian Chappell's book. Chappelly.
And Ian Chappell outswore them all in the end, didn't he?
I think the grandfather was, I think he was the shining light, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Certainly he's got the gates named after him over there at the Adelaide
Oval. I've been there, yeah.
The
Adelaide Oval?
Yeah. It's a beautiful spot.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Stephen.
No worries. See you later.
Good information. I wish I had something to contribute. Which ad were those people? And that's the only way I'm going to know. In fact, you probably shouldn't say.
On the ABC. I can't think of an Ian Chappell commercial.
Yeah. See, I only know cricketers if they've been parodied by Billy Birmingham in those 12th Man.
Well, Ian Chappell played. He was the one in the original Billy Birmingham who was portrayed as being a little boring in his delivery.
Right.
And so Mike Gibson makes fun of Ian Chappell for repeating everything that he says. Like, Ian, what would you say if I told you to repeat everything I say? What would I say if you said... And that's how the joke went.
I see. We're experiencing technical issues. I think it's something to do with the weather myself. We can't make contact with Jim Graham. If you're waiting for the news headlines, they are on the way. I understand we still have a severe weather warning in progress for flash flooding for people in the north central northern country, Wimmera, Mallee, Alpine areas, East Gippsland, it's Gippsland if you prefer, and northeast forecast districts. It's all happening.
We're making weather history here. Like we, for two nights in a row, we have told the Mallee that they're getting some heavy rain.
Mm. We're also making technical history here in the studios because our regular producer, John Standish, has come down possibly with what I've had for the last week. Pete Dillon is here. He is literally smashing at the desk with a wrench while four other men in overalls look over his shoulder, having no idea what's going on in there. Your ABC dollars at work, that's all I can say.
Because we're hoping to get to Jim Graham.
Hello, I'm here.
He's here. Jim, it's so good to hear from you. I could not have improvised any more weather information.
I'm sure you could have. I'm sure you could have gone on for hours.
Take it away, Jim.
We have this motor mechanic who comes in every now and again to slam into the desk if it doesn't work properly. So, thanks, George.
Send him down.
Oh, no, you've got a couple of problems down there, too.
Cheers. Yes, good evening. It's still 774. I think you'll find it is with Tony Martin and Tony Wilson. We've now lost our theme song. I would ask you to play the guitar solo live in the studio if you could, Tony. Do you have your instrument with you? No?
Yeah, I do.
And you're now slightly off mic. Allow me.
I do have my guitar here, but fortunately, we have our guests arriving in order to spare the listeners the noise I make out of a guitar.
Yeah, that's right. I blame the weather. We're experiencing severe weather within the studio this evening. Fiona Scott-Norman, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much, Tony Martin.
That's working. That microphone is working.
That's a good thing.
Explain your guest.
Well, I don't know. I think that's a hard call. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I wanted to, talk a little bit about Fringe tonight, because the Fringe Festival opens tomorrow.
Mm.
Pretty exciting.
Starts tomorrow, does it?
Yeah.
Officially tomorrow.
Well, I think the big do-lally party is Friday. But shows are definitely kicking off tomorrow night.
And what do you think of this new sort of deal where it's kind of becoming a way to work in comedy festival shows? Do you think comedy festival people are sort of muscling in too much on the fringe?
Comedy is like Patterson's curse, I tell you what, or the Wandering Jew, you know, once it gets in. I mean, that happened with Adelaide, I think, that the comedy started encroaching in what was a general arts festival, and then it became much more of a comedy festival. Same in Edinburgh. I think that it's because it's... I think it's actually great to work in a comedy show during the Fringe Festival because it's a much less pressured environment and you're much less likely to lose your shirt. And the audiences are more general.
But I guess there'd be a lot of people who are going along for some traditional fringe anarchy.
Yeah.
And don't really appreciate... hearing about the differences between men and women and how women have got so many shoes and won't stop shopping. They won't.
No, it's true. But who ever tires of hearing about aircraft food?
Not me.
And cats and dogs.
That's right.
Tony Wilson, what do you think about them?
Well, I'm just scanning the manuscript I've just slaved over for the last year and a half to see if I've done any airline observations in it. I don't think I have. So,
well, it's going to be a crashing failure then, I'm afraid. You've got to get the aircraft... You know, because, you know, when you're at 20,000 feet and, oh, what's going on with the stewardess?
Well, you know how you said wandering dew before.
I did.
I actually think that is I thought it was wandering dew, D-E-W.
Did you? That's very cute.
But it's actually wandering dew.
As in Jew.
And is that anti-Semitic? Because it is...
I don't think so.
Are you serious? I've been saying wandering dew for years, and that's actually wrong.
It is wrong.
So you say wandering dew with a D-E-W as well.
I just assumed that that's what it must be. I thought it surely can't be. It can't mean itinerant yid. It can't mean that.
But it does. I'm pretty sure that's where it comes from.
Really?
From the itinerant yid, exactly. Which I think is quite a nice name.
But it's not a very popular plant.
No, it's actually poisonous, is it not?
No, it's not poisonous. I think it's just a pain in the arse. Because once you've got it, you cannot get rid of it. Because it just keeps going. And it just wanders across the thing. But a friend of mine was such a bad gardener that the only thing he could grow was wandering dew, and he actually had it in pot plants in his lounge room. So ungreen was his thumb.
It's impossible to get rid of. It breaks apart. It's like a rocket that has a section 3 and section 4.
Yeah, and then it just digs down again and grows. We did get it out of our garden, but you have to really go out there every day and just keep pulling it up.
So when you're berating the wandering Jew in your backyard, that's really the only legitimate circumstance in which you could attack the Jew vocally, as it were.
I'm just
learning this now on air because I thought it was Jew for years. Well, I assumed it was Jew.
I had a beautiful sentence that had wandering Jew with a D in it and just did not work once I had to swing it over to a J.
Yeah. was it wandering D... U-E or D-E-W?
D-E-W. Yeah. I thought wandering Jew was a beautiful couple of words.
It's gorgeous.
I think if you change it to my spelling, it is beautiful and it'll become one of the more popular weeds. But if you're going to be, it is anti-Semitic as it stands. We've got to call it something else.
You're listening to the Gardening and Racism Hour here on 774 Melbourne.
I think it could catch on.
And ABC Across Victoria with Tony Martin and Tony Wilson filling in for the absent Derek Gill, who you can hear doing the conversation hour. Fiona Scott Norman is with us.
Taken with Gill or no Gill, by the way.
You're our guest, and you've brought in your own sub-guest.
Yes. So, Fringe, yes, because, you know, life is like a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get, and at Fringe, that's certainly the case, except it's probably going to have partial nudity. Now, Declan Green is my guest tonight, and I brought him in because he's written a play which is on as part of Fringe.
Yes.
Amazing. I am the queen of Segway.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that nice?
It's nicely done.
Thank you. And that's Declan, you can hear laughing there. He's written a play called A Black Joy, and I'm very taken with it for a number of reasons. I've seen quite a bit of Declan's work in the past, and how did you describe yourself? Incoherent filth?
Well, yeah, I think that's my particular brand of theater.
How's that for a niche?
It's great.
Mm. Yeah, that's what the young people are up to.
Well, but I must say, in all of your press, I don't know if you've actually licensed this press yourself, but you are described, Declan, as a nihilist. Is that true?
Well, my father's name is Niall Green, and my middle name is Niall also. So I'm perhaps some brand of nihilist. Certainly.
Right.
There you go. So it's more of a pun, really.
rather than a political gesture.
Well, no, I think it can be both at the same time. You've got to have your finger in every pie. Yeah, I think I'm a bit of a nihilist, definitely.
Because nihilist, that's a rejection of all... Of everything, really,
of everything.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have that much time.
I have to say, I'm not. my knowledge of nihilism is largely informed from those German musicians at the end of the Big Lebowski, so I'm not really sure what I'm talking about here.
Oh, well, yeah, no, neither do I. I think it's just a brand of cynicism, really. And I think it's something interesting to bring to the stage.
Probably pimp my cynicism, I think. Nihilism. It's nihilism plus. Upsize my cynicism. You get nihilism. Okay, so obviously nihilism is not what undercuts all your plays then. That's not what they're about.
Well, yeah, there's definitely a very, very cynical and very, very dark attitude that I think goes through all my work. But it's not in the sense that you're going to come into the theatre and get slogged in the face with a lot of really heavy stuff. It's comedy is kind of what I deal with. It just happens to be a very, very kind of dark breed of comedy.
Yes. Now, the plays I've seen of yours before were Cell Block Booty and Bumtown.
I didn't know you saw Cell Block Beauty.
I did see Cell Block Beauty.
Thank you.
Which was a fine piece of work. I saw it in a car park in Collingwood, underground car park, and it pretty much consisted of 7-foot drag queens and wearing police uniforms.
Well, it was a homage to Prisoner.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that we staged in an underground car park under the Commission Flats in Collingwood. So that was our substitute prison. And it had lots of, you know, like those sleazy B-grade women in prison films by Roger Corman.
They're fantastic.
So we had lots of, like, heaving bosoms and
lots of
unwarranted
bosoms.
Nudity and electrodes being applied to things.
So lots
wonderful.
Of screaming and... Yeah, it was terrific. And it was hysterical. But you actually... Yeah, I mean, you did come at it. It felt like a time warp, like you'd been gone back to the days of the B-grade movie made flesh.
And we like for our audience to leave feeling just a little bit coated in filth.
Yeah, dirty.
That's the way.
You do feel a little bit dirty.
You've kind of been swimming around in a septic tank for an hour or so.
But that was in the past. And then, sorry, I think you mentioned something called Bumtown. I think we need a synopsis there.
Well, Bumtown was a town where all the losers go. Basically,
right, the bums.
The bums, and they're trying. I mean, it was, I think, would it be fair to say that it was a little inspired by the John Waters?
Absolutely, we're totally inspired. And you might even say we shamelessly rip off John Waters.
Yes.
John Waters,
the presenter.
Yes, that's him. He's a filthy man. After a few drinks.
Well, I, because of my problem with having the same name as the actor Tony Martin, I discovered that John Waters, the one we're talking about, the American film director, was unable to join American Actors Equity for years because of the play school John Waters belonging. That's what I was told. I'm not sure if that's true. But I was sick over the weekend. I was reading books, and I actually read John Waters' book, Crackpot, which I hadn't read since it came out in 1987. That is one of the funniest books ever written, I would have to say.
Is that an autobiography?
It's just essays. And there's a hilarious essay about the TV show which the film Hairspray was based on. Which I think was called, I can't remember what it was called, I think it was called The
Corny Collins Show.
The Corny Collins Show. Yeah. But it was based on a real show called The Buddy Dean Show, was on for years in Baltimore. And the kids in that show were, you know, stars. They would wag school because it would start at 2:30 in the afternoon. They would sneak and dance. All they did was dance. I think that was pretty much all
it was.
Very
clean, very healthy.
And they were the nicest kids in town. That's how they were billed.
Yeah.
But because, you know, what I wouldn't have thought of is that then they became hated. And they had to hire bodyguards because nobody liked the nicest kids in town. And then all the footage was destroyed because it was a live show. They wanted to use scenes from the Buddy Dean show in Diner, the Baltimore movie Diner. And John Waters just recalls all of that, tracks down a lot of the Buddy Deaners, as they were called, and describes them hilariously.
Are they all junkies now?
Mostly.
Yeah.
Junkies or door-to-door traveling salesmen.
That's good.
But you just, I think you forget how funny John Waters actually is.
Yeah, he's brilliant, a wit.
Which movies is, for the cheat notes for people who don't know IMDb backwards, which movies has John Waters done?
I think his first feature-length film was called Mondo Trasho. Then he made one called Multiple Maniacs.
Well done. You're a bit of an aficionado,
then
aren't
there
you?
Was,
Tony Martin and Films. Hello.
Yeah. Just nerdish.
Fresh play.
Only on this topic, Pink Flamingos, of course, because somebody ate something they shouldn't have at the end of it. Female Trouble, Desperate Living. Then he sort of slightly went into the mainstream with Polyester, which had, I think, Tab Hunter.
That's it, yeah.
With The Divine.
And
didn't they then go on to do another film together?
Lust in the Dust.
There was a non-John Waters.
Yeah, that's right.
And wasn't Polyester in some gimmick?
That was, they had them, the polyester film, they marketed it with cards that were distributed when you saw the film. They're called, it was supposed to be filmed in Odorama, which meant Divine, the drag queen, her character in the film, had a very heightened sense of smell. So she'd just be sniffing around the movie and you get a little number that came up on the screen. You scratch the corresponding number on the card.
Right.
And it'd be the smell of maybe bubble gum, but sometimes it was more unpleasant sorts of smells.
Yeah, I saw that in the, and I think there was vomit at some stage.
Yeah, of course there was.
Yeah, so it starts off very benignly and you think, oh, that's nice. And then, of course, it, you know, the number flashes up on the screen
that's
and
right.
something really hideous is going, that should
come
down.
Back. They should do a new
they
one
should.
In
there. It's really a better gimmick than 3D glasses.
And then,
the Jonas Brothers film in Odorama.
The Wire.
But then he hit the mainstream.
Is that cordite I smell?
with Hairspray.
Yes.
And that was a massive hit. And then, wasn't that a Broadway musical? And then...
Yeah, that was only recently.
And
yeah,
then there was a movie of that.
Yeah.
Crybaby
was
next.
Yeah, Johnny Depp's first big vehicle.
That's fantastic. Then I think Serial Mom.
Yeah, one of the greatest. And this played a Black Joy that, that I'm doing for friends has a gigantic Serial Mom homage in the middle of
really?
It. These prank phone calls.
I wouldn't think anyone would ever do an homage to Serial Mom.
Absolutely. That's a beautiful film. It's
Kathleen
incredible.
Turner, I always remember her son uses the S word at the dinner table and she says, I don't want anyone using the brown word at the dining table. Then what comes after Serial Mom? Would it have been Pecker?
Oh, Pecker, that was 1999, I think.
Cecil B. Demented?
Yeah, Cecil B. Demented.
And... The last one was called A Dirty Shame.
And now he's trying to make a Christmas film called Fruitcake, a gay Christmas film starring Johnny Knoxville.
Well, I'd like to think that maybe he's finally made some coin off the massive success of Hairspray.
Absolutely. Yeah, you'd hope so. I mean, what would John Waters spend money on, though, really? I think he buys a lot of John Wayne Gacy's paintings.
Yeah.
Like, well, they're not worth that much, surely. I mean,
they should be.
I'm always fascinated by the art of the convicted criminals, but the people on death row, you know, your Charles Manson music and all that kind of stuff.
So, what about a Black Joy? We probably should give you the opportunity to talk about.
Please, we've got distracted by the work of John Waters.
Well, and your own as you do, work. But it was nice to see two people who knew a lot going on about it. I had a feeling that might happen.
Well, I read Crackpot on the weekend. I just forgot. I had forgotten. Mm. How funny the guy is. And in fact, there's a movie of his lecture that he does. What would you call it?
It's called This Filthy World.
And you know who directed that?
I do not.
Jeff from Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David's manager.
Good.
Jeff Garland directed
Amazing.
That.
Amazing.
And that is hilarious. I watched that, and that is pretty much a stand-up comedy act.
It is, absolutely. He can just actually do anything. He's just an absolute genius. He's a visual artist as well.
And his commentary track, he's one of the few people who does an interesting commentary track, I find.
Absolutely.
The Crybaby one, I can hardly recommend. A Black Joy, where is it?
A Black Joy is on at 45 downstairs. That opens on Thursday night.
Well, which is lovely.
Yes.
Now, what is it? Because the image is of a sort of attractive blonde woman with what looks like a lump of offal hanging out of her mouth, which, and I have to say, offal is something which features heavily in your work.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, horse
I'm a vegan. Entrails. I'm very attracted to meat. I have a very, very interesting relationship with meat. I find it very, very fascinating.
So you don't want to kill for your own food. But you're happy to just have things die for your publicity purposes and to put in your shows.
I shoplifted that. So
did you?
Fine.
You shoplifted the offal.
So there was no economy involved in that actual specific
How do you
photograph.
Shoplift offal?
Pink Flamingo is divine. You just slip it under your dress and you just walk out.
You were wearing a dress.
Wouldn't they give away offal at the end of the day if it hadn't sold? I would have thought you'd only have to go to any offal. Merchant
purveyor.
At around about 5:15 and say that offal over there.
Go to the offal store. I love the offal
store. I'm surprised you needed to steal.
I just will say we are now getting SMSs, people saying we left out Roman candles.
Oh, the complete, and the Diane Linklater story.
But these are short films, surely.
Yeah, that's right.
We would have to talk about Hag in a Black Leather Jacket if we were going to get into the short film oeuvre of John Waters. Surely John Fane has covered all this. John Fane has SMS'd us from Kangaroo Island to say he's listening to us loud and clear on his car radio and surely wondering what has happened to his station. We should just have some music, then we have more to talk about. Here's the Devil Goat Family String Band with the Man of Constant Sorrow.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right, everyone's dancing in the studio. When I say everyone, Fiona Scott-Norman, DJ, broadcaster, cabaret director, and her guest, Declan Green, who is premiering his work, A Black Joy, as part of the Melbourne Fringe Festival, which kicks off tomorrow. What were you saying?
The track you just heard Devil Goat Family String Band with The Man of Constant Sorrow. You may
A little bit of an upbeat number put out there. Nice.
Well, you probably know it from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, but the Gus McMillan, who you may know from the Bluegrassy Knoll. He's one of the main songwriters for the Devil Goat Family String Band.
I thought probably not a good track to play at a wedding.
Probably not.
We're coming up
DJing. I'd like to ask you something, but really we've only got a minute or something.
We have, but we've got more time after the
news. Yeah, exactly. So what I'm saying is we're just chilling out. Oh, thank you.
Nobody's going anywhere. And Declan was saying that
it's a hostage situation, Declan.
He's looking forward to Liza Minnelli's upcoming... what is it going to be? Are you saying she can't sing anymore? Is that what you're implying?
Look, I think as a gay man, maybe that's... I don't want my friends howling for my blood. But, I mean, you know, I think there will be a lot of coke-addled ramblings. So, you know, we can look forward to that.
I'm hoping, as I said, I'm hoping that's on the poster. Coke-addled rambling. What else have we got coming up?
Who wouldn't go?
Who wouldn't? In the next hour, we will also be joined by Ed Nimmervoll. And then after nine, someone else who's got a show at the Fringe, a very good show, Justin Hazelwood, the bedroom philosopher, is going to be with us. It's all coming up on the rest of evenings. Geel or no geel, as we call it.
News. No geel.
No
with
geel.
Arms crossed.
Geel.
Zero guilt. News is next.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right. And before we get back to nonsensical film information, I've been told to provide a severe weather warning for flash flooding for people in the north central northern country, Wimmera, Mallee, Alpine areas, East Gippsland and northeast forecast districts. We have a situation. That's what we've got. A low pressure system over South Australia will move over northern Victoria tonight before moving to the east of Victoria Wednesday morning and deepening. Strengthening. Heavy rain and isolated thunderstorms, which may lead to flash flooding, is forecast for the north central northern country, Wimmera, Mallee, Alpine areas, East Gippsland and northeast forecast districts during Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. General falls of 25 to 50 millimetres are likely. That's likely. The State Emergency Service advises that people don't drive, ride or walk through floodwater. That would be foolish. People make fun of you. Keep clear of creeks and storm drains. Don't even look at them. Don't even think about it.
What if they look at you?
Don't even think about it. For emergency help in floods and storms, you know what to do. Ring your local SES unit on 132 500. And please, people, no swearing. Keep it clean.
You are on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria, the home of the live read, because I'm about to go as well. Have you missed out on tickets to the grand final?
Yes.
That is a rhetorical question. Yes. Don't any of you answer. 774 ABC Melbourne is giving away a double pass to the granny. All you need to do is send in a picture of your best grab.
Grab.
Your photo can be of anything or anyone.
Right.
So I think creatively, but must be original and contain a... grab.
A grab. So it doesn't have to be a footy grab.
No.
It could be anything that constitutes a grab.
Be careful about putting too much creative energy into this tone because you don't want the prize. You have to remember that.
And Pete Dillon, our producer, said this has already been a contentious competition idea.
Entries close at midday tomorrow. That's Wednesday, the 23rd of September. And our favourite entries will be on display at 774's Grand Final Eve live broadcast from Fed Square this Friday morning. The winner will be announced during the broadcast after the 10 o'clock news. Entries will be judged on originality and creativity. Please go to abc.net.au/Melbourne and click on competitions and events.
Well, thank goodness. That's all been clearly explained. Fiona's gotten home and very impressed by what
very
you see.
I'm very excited because I haven't got grand final tickets and I would like to be there very much, as I would like to have Nick Riewoldt's children. But I think it's a photograph, perhaps, Declan, of you shoplifting offal. That's kind of a grab.
No, there you go.
That's a grab and run.
That's a grab and run,
If you've just joined us, Declan Green, offal shoplifter, is with us, talking about his Fringe show.
And Fiona
my
Scott,
resume.
And Fiona Scott Norman, offal shoplifter promoter.
Yes, I think you can put that on your CV. It can go along with the rest of your achievements. Writer of A Black Joy. Why is it called A Black Joy? What does that mean?
Well, the play, it's a play that's on for the Fringe Festival,
Fringe
45
Festival,
downstairs.
Opening on Thursday.
Opening on Thursday.
Downstairs.
And it's kind of the central concept of the play, it's all about feeding and cannibalism, be that literal or kind of figurative. And so A Black Joy is really just about kind of taking delight in the, I guess, the exploitation of others, which is kind of what the play is really, yeah, kind of centrally about.
Right. Now, the characters' names.
Yes.
The characters' names in this play, John Candy.
Oh, yes.
Dakota Fanning.
Oh.
Joseph Cotton.
Crikey.
Diane Keaton. Bette Davis and Corey Haim.
Yes.
Is it all total coincidence or...?
It is. I mean, the whole idea is every single character in the play has a celebrity namesake.
Right.
And every single one of them is joined together in this kind of cannibalistic cycle of feeding. Mm. But they're not actually... they're pretty much just namesakes. They're not actually the celebrities that we're depicting there. Because, for instance, Diane Keaton in this play is a neurotic upper-class housewife who then discovers empowerment through female bodybuilding.
Right, that's not her. And Corey Haim?
So Jane Fonda might have been a better choice.
Well, maybe. Yeah, this is true. But, I mean, they're not supposed to have that much kind of...
I see.
You know, that much of a tie-in. But Corey Haim's actually a teen neo-Nazi.
Right.
In this
and
play.
Did you have a lot of kind of, you know, deciding what they were going to be, rejecting certain names?
It was just a little bit kind of what felt good to me at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think names that people might, you know, take a bit of delight in seeing repeated over and over again during the play. I just love Corey Haim. I think it's great, you know.
Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. is one that's fun to say. Or I always remember there was a German actress called, in the 50s called Hildegard Neff.
Oh, really?
And Bill Collins always loved to say that. Well, we've got another title from the Hildegard Neff collection.
I think Joseph Cotton's a really beautiful name. I think it's great to say.
Joseph Cotton.
Who is Joseph Cotton?
Joseph Cotton was in Citizen Kane.
Yes.
And was part of the Mercury Players, I think, on Broadway with Orson Welles. And then, of course, was in The Third Man. Was he not the main character in The Third Man,
I think?
I'm not
sure.
It's a great
he did a couple
tune.
Of films with Bette Davis.
And I think... may have come out to Australia. Made a film out here.
Third Man theme, there you go.
There you go. We'll have a bit of zither in the evenings.
Indeed. Corey Haim, who is Corey Haim?
Well, Corey Haim was a child star, you know, around
the
same
time. Sounds like a child star.
Yeah.
The late 80s.
Yeah, that's right. And it was the kind of, he and Corey Feldman were kind of a bit of a double package.
They made maybe seven films or something.
Yeah, that's right. And then they, I think...
Were they the Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland of their time?
License to Drive was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Dream a Little Dream was another. Sorry, we'll get into lists again. Don't do that.
But I think they're great because then Corey Haim became, you know, as is the word, the child star and kind of, you know, bloated addict of various kinds of things. And then he and Corey Haim recently reunited Corey Feldman reunited for a TV show called The Two Coreys.
Weren't they in The Lost Boys? Were they both in The Lost Boys with Kiefer Sutherland? I think they were.
Why do you think there's a delight that's taken in child stars plummeting to earth?
Well,
because I think it's quite a mean streak that society has. These are children. These are children
true.
That are just earning their parents a decent wage. and then when they plummet to earth, everyone seems to rejoice in it.
I think it's like smoking. You know, you've got the two sides of your brain. Like when you smoke, you have to pretend that there's that you're not doing yourself heinous damage. You know, so you go, tasty cigarettes. Oh, I'll ignore the cancer and the emphysema potential there. And with child stars, we go, young talent time, look at them dancing for our entertainment, and ignore the fact that there's a good chance that 78% of them are going to end up with junkies with eating disorders.
Absolutely, and I think I don't think that's particularly limited to child stars either. I think there's we love feeding off celebrities, and this is kind of central to the play as well. We really do take delight in kind of this vicarious life and like enjoying the fame and the glamour of this, but then we really, there's this absolute cultural schadenfreude and just really enjoying seeing these people burn out and, you know, and see them kind of exploit it.
And ending up on those reality shows with where a bunch of them are in a house together.
Yes.
Is it, what's the one called where it was...
Like Celebrity Big Brother.
It was Vern Troyer, someone from the Brady Bunch. It was the saddest collection I've ever seen.
Exactly. I think that's a feeding we're all kind of guilty of culturally.
I feel the opposite. Like I really like the idea that who's... I've had a mental blank on the child star in E.T. She's quite a big star.
Drew Barrymore.
I really like that she went down and then she got herself out and now she's, I find her one of the more likable interviewees.
She's great. She's very lively.
And she was in that magnificent, was she in Donnie Darko? She's in Donnie Darko and she executive produced Donnie Darko, I think.
I think Jodie Foster too.
Yeah.
She had a bit of a dark childhood, didn't she?
I think so.
Yeah, with the whole taxi driver thing and things like that. It was all a bit weird.
We're getting a lot of people SMSing to say, yes, the Coreys were both in The Lost Boys. So it's good to know, 774.
Alert listeners.
I've been told to say that Fiona Scott Norman and Declan Green will continue to shock and bewilder after we hear this fine song, this excellent song from the album Write Your Adventures Down, a tribute to the Go-Betweens. This is Adele Pickvance with Finding You.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right, filling in for Derek Gill, who's manning up on the Conversation Hour this week. And the song we heard just before was, of course, Adele Pickvance with her version of Finding You from Write Your Adventures Down, a tribute to the Go-Betweens. Came out a couple of years ago now. Dave McCormack was involved in throwing that together, and fine work all concerned. Fiona Scott Norman is with us, and Declan Green.
Indeed.
A man whose show, is it opening tomorrow night?
It's there's a preview tomorrow night, and then it actually opens on Thursday. It is a cheap preview,
$10. Ooh, that is cheap.
How do people obtain those tickets if they're keen?
If they are keen, then they can log on to the Melbourne Fringe website, melbournefringe.com.au, or they can book on 9660 9666.
Excellent. And Fiona, you were mentioning just before you've been to see a documentary that I know a lot of people are talking about.
Oh, yes. Well, I think, yes, I've been to see Anvil, the story of Anvil.
Sounds great.
It's just a terrific documentary. And I don't know about you guys, but before I'd been to see it, I'd never heard of Anvil.
No, neither had I.
I remember Anvil.
Do you?
Really?
Yeah. They were the kids who were disaffected with Camberwell Grammar in late 80s were into Anvil.
So there's a pocket of Anvil worship there, was there?
I'm now not doing my former school any services. They probably keep that out of the brochure. But, yeah, there was a bit of Anvil worship. How are they going now?
Well, it's sort of very interesting because, I mean, I just brought it up because it ties into the whole celebrity eating itself and people eating celebrity and the way that we just feed off it, and also the schadenfreude of people for celebrities who are perhaps not doing as well as they used to. And I mean, Anvil, well, basically, they're from Canada, which I think worked against them, to be honest, in terms of the heavy metal genius and position that they initially held. In like 1983, they were the heavy metal band.
Right.
And they had a big hit called Metal on Metal, which is apparently one of the go-to tracks in terms of metal history.
I think Derek Gill gives that a run occasionally.
Yeah, but only in the last hour.
I think you'll find it's Rufus Wainwright does.
Right, of course it is.
Yeah, he does the whole album. It's terrific.
And so Anvil, how are they looking now? I mean, you're talking about the 80s.
They're in their 50s, and this documentary, the guy who made the documentary was actually one of their roadies.
Right.
And they've been going, the thing about Anvil is a guy called in it, a name I think that will ring a few bells for you, Rob Reiner.
Oh, yes, but it's Rob with two B's, I think, isn't it?
No. It's just, I don't think it is. It's just not the same Rob who made Spinal Tap.
No. And that's the thing. Every review feels the need to draw a comparison to Spinal Tap. And obviously there is a certain amount of fun to be had at Anvil's expense. But I understand that by the end of the film, you are cheering for Anvil. Is that right?
You are deeply committed to Anvil taking their place in the pantheon of metal. You just love the guys. They're so... It's actually an incredibly sad documentary.
Right.
Because they've just kept going against all the odds. And the lead singer, Steve Lips Cudlow, who is... that's the Lips. He's pretty deluded.
Right.
Really. I mean, they've put out 13 albums, each to decreasing acclaim throughout the last 20 years.
Right.
And the documentary pretty much picks up where they go off on a poorly attended tour of Europe and also attempting to put out their 13th album called 13. And they've got no money, and they're, you know, it's just interviews with them and with their wives, their long-suffering wives.
Yeah.
You know, they're so human and so, they're just so full of self-belief, like they never give up.
Right.
So it's this really strange sort of situation where you're watching these people and you just want to give them a hug.
And they're genuinely friends, the two blokes, aren't they?
Absolutely.
It's like when I met Francis Rossi and Rick Parfitt. How could I forget that name? From Status Quo.
Yes.
And they've been going a long time. And you get the feeling it's just they just like hanging out together. Yeah. That's what
these
keeps the whole machine on the road.
And they're still going. And even though it's been a bleak 15 years for them, like very bleak, they just keep believing in their, you know, that they're going to get back to that place where they were. And I mean, at the beginning of the movie, there's all these interviews with the Ace of Spades guy and
Lemmy.
Lemmy, yes, and a guy from Metallica, and they're all just going, these guys were it. We all looked up to them. We all thought they were amazing. And it's like every other band went on to sell millions of records, but Anvil didn't.
Right.
And the fantastic thing about it is that since Anvil, the documentary, was made, Anvil have now played to more people than they did in the entire 30 years preceding.
And they've been, I think they're on 774 with Stubbsy recently, so they're getting about.
Oh, that's great.
I wonder if Stubbsy played a track.
Yeah, I wonder.
I wonder metal
if there
on
was
metal.
Any Anvil.
Metal on Metal is the pick, I have to say.
Anvil, the story of Anvil is in cinemas now, and everyone who sees it just seems to love it. You've touched on something, you know, hard times for celebrities. We're going through a global financial crisis. I don't know if this is a symptom of it, but everyone, I'm sure, in this room would have seen photographs of Dr. Edelston and his fiancée.
And his, if I may use inverted commas, 26-year-old.
Well, fiance. I can't comment on that being a host. I'm not allowed to have an opinion, but it says in the paper today, controversial medico doctor Jeffrey Edelston's fiancée, Bryn Gordon, upstaged the wags in a barely there flesh-flashing frock at the Brownlow last night. Miss Gordon, 26, braved the blue carpet in an unusual sequined gown by US label Muriel. Of course, she's due to wed Dr. Edelston, 29. at Crown on November 29th. And it says, but this is the part, we all know that. This is the part that caught my eye. And I thought this must have been a typo in the paper today. The last line of the article is, the couple will wed in front of 500 guests. The nanny star Fran Drescher and Seinfeld's Jason Alexander will MC the event.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Is the nanny available?
I guess she
MC your wedding?
Yeah, I think she probably is. You know, $500 and a couple of bottles of bubbly.
Jeffrey Edelston's practice definitely went bankrupt at some point.
I can't comment on that, but I'm assuming it rings true, what you're saying.
Yes. I'm just saying it's a remarkable resurrection.
Yes.
It's a remarkable resurrection that makes you want to redraft our bankruptcy laws.
He did have grey hair at one point, didn't he? It's not just me.
No, I think he did too. But, you know, he's got a young wife. Young fiancée, he would like to be.
Has he gone the Rupert Murdoch route of sprinkling Ovaltine on the top of his head?
Is that what Rupert Murdoch does?
Rupert Murdoch to me looks like a melting candle with Ovaltine sprinkled on the top.
Is that an opinion?
I think that's an observation. I'm being told to wind up this potentially defamatory conversation.
Just getting interesting.
Fiona, thank you for coming in, and thank you, Declan, for joining
us. Thanks for having me.
To Black Joy, let's just mention it once again. It's opening at the Fringe in Melbourne.
Sick black comedy.
And it's directed by Susie D and features Anne Browning, Chris Bunworth, Tom Considine, Ash Flanders, Miriam Glasner, Carol Pacciullo and Megan Twycross. Great cast.
Great cast, great director.
Yes.
Susie D.
And do we have like 10 seconds for Declan to give his opinion on that dress?
No comment.
Perhaps it's on the website. Thanks for coming in, guys. But as always, we have enormous fish to fry here on Evenings in the form of Derek's Quiz. Are you ready to go, Tony? Got
yes,
your questions?
I am.
Hit the music if you could, Nick. Thanks, guys. The number to call for the quiz here on Evenings is 1-300-222-774. Tony is brandishing a spectacular prize pack. Please call now.
Because you want Marple, why didn't they ask Evans? Because you want Being Human Series 1, and because you want Australia Folk Songs and Bush Verse, it's jackpot, 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 1-300-222-774.
Your 10 minutes starts now.
The carryover question. In what year did the National Gallery of Australia purchase Jackson Pollock's Blue Poles? Mm. We had the answer 1975 last night from a very unlucky quiz doer who was wrong. Mm. Our first caller, we're waiting on him or her to attempt our carryover question.
We do not have a single caller for the quiz. I must have driven people away with my endless talk of the two Coreys.
1-300-222-774.
We will not mention the Edelstons. We will not speculate as to anybody's age again in this program, I promise you.
Random facts about this painting. I was worried this might happen. So I have some business around the question.
Yeah, well.
Including that we bought it for $1.3 million. To much ridicule and much criticism. How much do you think it's worth now?
I don't know.
$200 million.
And everybody laughed, Tony. They laughed. Vanez.
9 minutes.
We did the first minute ourselves.
From Nelson is on the line. Vanez, are you there? Or have I pronounced your name incorrectly? Is it Vanez?
Vanez, yeah.
Oh, sorry about that, Vanez. Do you have any idea what the answer is?
Try 1973.
Oh, correct. Congratulations, Vanez.
Well done, well done.
That's right. In 2007, Jeffrey Archer wrote an alternative gospel according to which apostle?
I think we're getting a storm because I missed that totally.
Sorry about that. In 2007, Jeffrey Archer wrote and released a book called The Gospel According to Whom? According to which apostle?
St. Luke.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's one
down.
So
Luke's got his own gospel.
Gospel, he does.
A popular one, I think, that comes in at book three. Let's go to
Jeff from Yarraville. Do you know the answer? What was the alternative gospel penned by Jeffrey Archer? Who was the apostle he selected?
8 minutes.
Jeff?
I don't know any apostles. Could it be Blakey from On the Buses?
No, I think
it's... Hey, Tony Martin, you said the first series of Blackadder in the Green Guide last week was terrible. I don't agree.
Well, that was an opinion. I wasn't broadcasting on the ABC when I said that. I'm not a fan of the first one, but I love the second to fourth. So...
Tony Wilson wouldn't agree with that.
No, I'm not allowed to have opinions either, but I love two to four as well. In 2007, we're going to go over to in Yarraville. In 2007, Jeffrey Archer wrote an alternative gospel, according to whom?
Thomas?
No,
it wasn't Thomas. Shame. Sorry about that, Ned. Glenn from Pakenham, do you have any ideas?
I'm only guessing Matthew.
Matthew's got his gospel.
No, he's already got one out. It's in the shops now. 1-300-222-774, the number to call.
He's a very high profile apostle.
For the quiz,
high
profile apostle.
7 minutes.
Thank you. 7 minutes. Leon from Greenvale. Any ideas?
How about according to Jeffrey?
To Jeffrey?
To Jeffrey himself.
Yeah.
No, it is one of the actual 12.
One of the actual 12
apostles.
You
really like if you go through them. James the Less, it's not him.
We've already eliminated about half of them. Thanks, Leon. Shane from Bacchus March. Which apostle is it?
I don't know. Give a crack at it, Mark.
Mark's got his apostles. Well, it's right there at the front of the book.
His epistle, I think, is what you mean.
Does it include the letters from St. Paul to the Corinthians? Like, dear Corinthians, having a wonderful time. Wish you were here, love, Paul.
No, it doesn't.
I think they're on email form now. Thank you very much, Shane. We have Judith from Sale. Which apostle are we looking for?
Someone's probably already said it. It's not Judas.
No, of course it is. Judas? Ed. The gospel according to... I would have even accepted your own name. Would have been close enough. I would have just assumed you had a lisp. Which famous rock band...
6 minutes.
Which famous rock band had the early name The New Yardbirds?
Oh, God.
70s band.
Pardon?
It's a 70s band. I'll give you that clue.
Skyhooks, I don't know.
No, it's not that.
Sorry, Judith. Pamela from Bingen Warri. I hope I'm getting that name correct. Binging Worry. I'm sorry, I am from across the ditch. What are we looking for here? Which is the band that were originally known as the New Yardbirds?
70s band.
I'm sorry, I have no idea.
Oh, sorry about that, Pamela. Ned from Yarraville, do you have any ideas?
Ned from Yarraville? Oh, we may have had Ned already.
Ned.
Leonie from Blackwood.
Yeah, no idea. Sorry.
Just throw in a big 70s rock band, and they're proper guitar rock too.
Proper
guitar rock. Oh, God. Status quo?
Five minutes.
Oh, no, sorry about that, Leonie. 1-300-222-774, the number to call. Loretta from Melbourne, do you know the band we're looking for?
So is it an Aussie band?
No.
No, not Australian.
Okay. So any ideas? Yardbirds? No idea.
Hermit. No, not Leonard Skinner. Sorry, Loretta. David from East Doncaster, who were originally known as the New Yardbirds?
I really don't know, but let's try Akadaka.
No, afraid not, David. Sam from Sandringham, do you know who it was?
Did Blakey ever play in a rock band?
Count Basie?
No, Blakey from On the Bus.
Blakey from Is it you again?
No. I don't think he did.
This okay. guitar solo with 2 minutes ago.
Alternative answer. What is it? Do you reckon they're a 70s pretty hard rock band?
Well, yeah, they're pretty big.
Pretty big.
4 minutes.
The Mighty Led Zeppelin?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Correct.
Oh, my God. That's the first question I've ever got right on the quiz. That's a win. I'm taking that as a win.
Which world dictator, who has one of the worst human rights records on the planet, is the author of a book called On the Art of Cinema?
On the Art of Cinema?
That's his book that he's written.
I was going to say Kevin Rudd, but...
he's a world dictator.
World dictator, yeah.
Right up there on the dictatometer.
Really? Socialist regime? Can you give me a clue?
I don't want to get into that. That's an opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Worst human rights records. Is it Kim, the North Korean one, Kim...
Kim Jong-il.
Kim Dae-jong.
Kim Dae-jong.
Kim Ma-jong. Kim Ma-jong. We might accept it.
Really?
Well, you gave the answer. Oh, that's the problem.
Minutes.
This is controversial.
What was it? Two in a row.
You were on. Yes, you gave us the Kim. You knew who you meant. We will accept that.
All right.
Oh, my God.
We're now in a revolutions area. In what year was the French Revolution?
French Revolution. I think 1776 was the American Revolution. French Revolution.
Have a stab if you don't know it.
Okay, I'll say 1648.
Wow, you really went away from your hunches there. to no good effect either.
No, sorry about that, but two brilliant previous answers.
I'm still taking that as a win forevermore.
I think next is it, Scott from Toowoomba. What year was the French Revolution?
2 minutes.
We're losing you, yeah. Scott. Are you there?
Say it again, Scott. No, he's going under a bridge. We're going to have to go on to Dave in Seymour. Dave, do you know what year the French Revolution was?
Oh, bugger, I knew it was July the something. But I don't know what year.
July the 14th, that's correct.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Bastille Day. I'll have a punt and say 1726.
Oh, no. Later.
It's turning into Sale of the Century. This is the other one. Sorry.
Heel or
the
no
price
heel.
Is right. Thank you. Andrew from Lilydale, what year was the French Revolution?
I think that's the 1770s sometime, isn't it?
We're not allowed to comment.
Later.
1788.
I can't say anything Great other than
not.
Wrong.
Jennifer from Warrigal, do you know what year the French Revolution was?
This is your last
All right, I always
minute.
Get the next go. And the bell's ringing.
Yeah, correct.
All right. 1779 was already said, wasn't it?
1788 was just said. And I'll again say later.
What, 1788? All right, okay.
The world was busy discovering, settling Australia that year, so they couldn't do anything else.
Yeah, all right. So,
take a stab, Jennifer.
All right, 1789.
That's correct.
Correct.
In what year was the Russian Revolution?
Oh, sugar. I know it was early 1900s. I believe it was anyway, after I said I know, but I believe it was. Can you give me a clue, please?
Oh, okay.
In what teens. You are in the right century.
Yeah, go on.
The teens.
What? All right, 1900.
No, we've given you the clue that it's in the teens.
1907.
No, we can't accept 1907. Sorry about that, Jennifer.
I really want to give this stuff away, Tone. This is
the prize will now jackpot till tomorrow. Or jackpot if you prefer, if you're from New Zealand. There were some tough questions in there. But well, I think we're seeing this is the standard the quiz normally is, I'm told.
The thing that's upsetting when you're writing the questions is that the stuff you know, you kind of know. And then if I do a question, they all seem... If I ever have to participate in a quiz, they all seem too hard to me. Mm. But then the quizzes I write, I think, are too easy because they're the stuff I know.
Yeah, okay. Well,
can you see the bind I'm in?
You are in quite a bind. We'll be picking up the drama tomorrow there. We have a guest who's been sitting in and who clearly, I can tell from his body language, has known the answer to several of the questions we've mentioned. Ed Nimmervoll, thanks for joining us.
Good evening.
Ed, tell us, why are you here?
Well, I come in to talk about the music subject.
I know you do
and
that.
We call it the secret history of, and I thought we'd talk about Bruce Springsteen because tomorrow is Bruce's 60th birthday.
That's what I was leading to. That's the reason. It's his 60th birthday, really. He's holding up pretty well, I think you'd say.
Oh, he is, and he's also come to the end of the latest chapter of his career because the E Street Band is touring again, and they've announced the end of that tour, and so he's putting that period of his career in hiatus again. Who knows what will happen next?
And when you say the secret history of Bruce Springsteen, what the heck do you mean?
Well, the thing about, I mean, that's just what we call the segment.
But, pardon me.
But there isn't a lot secret about Bruce because he's revealed a lot about his songs, about himself in his songs, and also in between the songs, like in his introductions to his music, he'll talk about his life. So there isn't a lot that we don't know about Bruce, and he's one of those rare people that there isn't any scandals, really.
No, isn't there?
The biggest thing was when he and his first wife divorced, and he was already having a relationship with the backing singer in the band, and there was a deal of controversy about that. You know, the fact that he went, well, he was having an affair and also went living with her straight away. And
it's not much to work with, though, is it, really? I mean, there was the time he pulled that woman from Friends out of the audience. Yeah. That was captured on film to his embarrassment.
Yeah, well, that was made up, of course.
Oh, I'm sorry, pardon me.
And there's actually sort of quite a story, because that woman he pulled up, that was the first video he ever did.
Was that really the first one? I think it was Brian De Palma may have directed that as well. No one got murdered in it, so that's a surprise. Right.
So Dancing in the Street was the very first video he ever did. The woman he pulled up out of the audience was Courtney Cox. And there's a bit of a story in him pulling people out of the audience, because he... long time before that, he was in a band called Steel Mill.
Right.
And that band had run into trouble with the police because they'd gone over time and there was a riot, and one of the band members, the police was after this particular band member for causing problems. So what the band used to do in subsequent performances, knowing the police was after this band member, they would pull people out of the audience and fill the audience with members. And that was...
Oh, really?
That was when that particular band member would disappear and the police couldn't find him.
Now, Ed, you've come in with quite a few songs, and we want to make sure you can get to a couple of them. So
that's right.
Do you want to cue up the first Bruce song?
Well, let's start with a song that we all recognise and know Bruce from, which is Born to Run.
Born to Run. Let's have that now on 774. I think we know who that was. Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run, here on ABC 774 and ABC Victoria. Ed Nimmervoll is with us talking about the secret history of Bruce Springsteen. When I was a kid, Ed, there was a version of that going around by a band called Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Do you remember that?
Okay, yes.
You remember them?
Yeah, of course I do, yeah.
They haven't done much lately.
Named after Frank Sinatra headline. Oh, Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Oh, of course, yeah, of course. We'll be getting to some Frank in the next hour, don't you worry, Frank fans. Bruce Springsteen, some more secret history, please.
Well, that particular song, I mean, that's the title song from his third album.
Right.
And it's actually the first song he wrote to record. Everything before then he'd written to perform rather than record. And that song took him initially 5 months to actually record. You know, he tried different ways, different studios, and so that's sort of quite a landmark. And that song is also the first time he performed it. There was a Rolling Stone journalist in the audience who famously said, "I have seen the future of rock and roll."
Right.
And that song is quite important to the whole Bruce Springsteen mythology.
And it's got the big wall of sound production too.
Well, he actually described it as what he wanted to do was have record something that sounded like Roy Orbison singing Bob Dylan, produced by Phil Spector.
Wow. Phil Spector, of course, the Chick Chick Boom guy, in case you're wondering. He's not doing well, apparently.
No, that's
right. He's not happy.
Yeah.
We won't go down the Phil Spector path.
That album was the first album. Like, I only really discovered rock music when I was about 12 years old. That was the album that did it for me. It was the first album I really ever got into. Yeah. I love it.
Because you would have been 12 in what era of music?
1983, 84.
So right in the era of new romantic music.
Yeah, stuff like Duran Duran and stuff were big when I was...
Spandau Ballet.
Yeah, yeah. But that album was the... Yeah,
and what it did was it's very Americana if you think about it. I mean, and that's what the thing about Bruce is that, you know, like there isn't a secret history. There isn't a, you know, he spent a lot of time developing his art, and there isn't you know, he was joined his first band when he was 15.
Wow.
But by that album he was already in his 20s. He didn't record. In all that time, he was with a lot of bands. So there isn't sort of this, you know, embarrassing litany of music that along the way. He just developed his performing skills.
He doesn't have any laughing gnomes in the closet.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, what do we want to hear next?
Well, let's listen to... there are songs. Yeah, like his very first single was a song called... escape. The band for band did.
I wish I could help.
Blinded by the Light.
Blinded by the Light.
That was his first single. Band for Band had made a history of recording Bob Dylan songs, and it was interesting that he should make a hit out of that. But there aren't many people that have done songs of Bruce's. But one was, there was a period in Bruce's life after Born to Run where he fell out with his manager. He earned $2 or $3 million from his first three albums, and his manager gave him less than a quarter of that. Mm. So Bruce said, "You know, I'm out of here." And so there were 3 years when he didn't do anything, but he was still writing. And so there was one song that he got to Patti Smith. Patti Smith, who was sort of this poet herself, she didn't want to record other people's songs, but once she saw it, she decided to record this song, and it's called Because the Night.
Now, do we... That's, of course, Patti Smith with Because the Night, penned by Bruce Springsteen here on 774. Tony Martin, Tony Wilson, Ed Nimmervoll is with us, giving us some Bruce Springsteen facts and information, because it is Bruce's 60th birthday tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yes.
What's he going to be doing for it? What will he get?
Who knows? But the man who's got everything. But, I mean, that is actually part of the Bruce thing. He is a man who wanted to be a musician and became that. And there's a famous story about, you know, when he was a teenager in New Jersey. Because one of the things that happened, which is a pivotal moment in his life, when he was 16, his family moved to California and he chose to stay in New Jersey.
Right.
So here's this 16-year-old kid living without his family. He could have got into a lot of trouble, but he obviously didn't. Music was his thing, and that's what he stuck to. There's no a record of him sort of going off the rails. But what he used to do, he used to walk past these mansions in New Jersey,
right,
and say, well, one of these days I will have one of those mansions. And he has one of those mansions.
Does he really?
And people know where he lives, and then they keep the distance from him. You know, like the property is away from.
Do people tell him to keep it down? Does he get a lot of that, do you think?
Well, I think it's a big mansion. But, you know, that's the thing, that he is true to the things he wanted. He wanted to be a musician from the very early days. He wanted that mansion. He got the mansion.
Mansion on the Hill.
Yeah.
It's one of his songs, isn't
exactly.
it? We can fit one more in
let's do that.
Well, let's play the song that is iconic as far as Bruce is concerned. Born in the USA, misunderstood because it was originally a song called Vietnam.
Right.
He had a script called Born in the USA for 2 years, a film script, and one day he actually looked at it again, had the song Vietnam, and changed Vietnam to Born in the USA.
And it was sort of co-opted, really, wasn't it, by the Republicans for a while
there?
Yeah,
but people misunderstood, because it is about, you know, I was born in the USA, I've been to Vietnam, look what you're doing to me.
All right, here it is now. Is Bruce Springsteen turning 60 tomorrow. Happy birthday, Mr. Springsteen, here at 774. Tony Martin and Tony Wilson filling in for Derek Gill.
He was in High Fidelity, wasn't he?
Bruce Springsteen, he was, sort of advising.
Yes.
Consulting.
With John Cusack.
In the next hour of this fine program, Justin Hazelwood, you may know him as the Bedroom Philosopher. He has an excellent album in the shops now and an excellent show coming up as part of the Fringe Festival. He'll be joining us, and we'll also have the weather. Of course we will. News is next.
I think we're going to speak to this amazing...
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne. And ABC Victoria.
Good evening, wherever you're listening, and hello especially to anyone who's just sat through a minor earthquake. There's a lot of that going on.
Frankston was hit.
Really?
Yes. Southeast Melbourne, apparently. Two earthquakes, if you were listening carefully.
Right.
First one, apparently bigger than the one a couple of months ago is the news we're getting through, but no one's reporting fallen stuff other than maybe trinkets on the sideboard.
No, it's certainly not like that film in Sense Around when I was a kid. Did you? You wouldn't be old enough to know what Sense Around is.
No.
It was a film called Earthquake that came out when I was a kid, and it was actually broadcast or screened rather in Sense Around, and I could detect nothing at all in cinemas. Apparently the seats were supposed to wobble about.
Really? So it was almost like a ride at the show.
That was what it was meant to be like.
Yeah.
And it's a very poor film if you've ever seen Earthquake.
So how would they... Because they're screening it in normal cinemas, are they? So they had to adapt each cinema to have a shaky
It was
shake?
Like the bass was just up so high in the Dolby or something was meant to shake. It was a con. There was nothing going on at all. But enough of that, because we have a guest with us in here at the moment. We have Justin Hazelwood. You may know him as the Bedroom Philosopher. Thanks for coming in, Justin.
Hola.
I've been on your show on, well, I think we can say
community radio.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing. There's no commercial aspect to us mentioning Triple R. I don't think that's in breach of the charter. Lime Champions is a show that you do. And I have to say, I've got more publicity and press and kudos from a five-minute segment I did on your show than pretty much anything I've done in the last 2 years.
It's just exploded on the internet.
It's a sketch I did called Gary Sizzle, where I went in on your show and claimed to be a consultant from commercial radio. Someone's put it on YouTube. You just type in Gary Sizzle, and it's out of control. A station in Brisbane, a commercial radio station, is actually using a grab of it to slag off their rivals.
I presume you gave permission for
no,
that.
I didn't give permission. It's totally illegal, but I'm not going to stop them because I hate their rivals so much that I'm quite willing to fan the flames. But so I have to thank you for the career leg up you've given me.
Oh, look, absolute pleasure. It was one of the funniest things I've ever heard. Just anything can be fixed with pink tickets and playing Snow Patrol. It's pretty much the essence.
Well, it's pretty much documentary footage. I don't think there's anything that I say in that sketch that I haven't heard said for real. But look, enough about me. I went and saw your show at the Comedy Festival, Songs from the 86 Tram. I thought it was one. I saw a lot of shows at this year's festival, and I think yours was one of the two best that I saw. For those who don't know about the show, do you want to just explain what it is? Because it's coming back. That's the news.
All right, it's a journey through. It's basically me doing a series of vignettes. I just really wanted to get that word out. On. Basically, me being a bunch of people on the 86 tram. Mm. So it's an exercise in, just being, public transport, I guess. But it's a very quintessentially Melbourne show.
So the 86 is Nicholson Street and Bourke Street, is that right? Then yeah. Down to St Kilda?
Yeah, I think it's, one of the more colourful trams.
Where does it start? Does it start at
Bundoora.
Really?
Bundoora to Docklands. it was formerly Telstra Dome, and I've had to rename. I'm renaming.
Of course, you did, especially on the ABC. You could never name such a thing that on the ABC.
Sorry, I should have
said that. Genera Dome.
Yeah, home brand dome. All the way through there.
And I know you're probably sick of telling this story, but 774 listeners may not have been exposed to it. Just explain what happened to you during that season.
Well, I got into my 16th show and everything was going great. I was sort of selling out, getting really good reviews. There was a real sense of buzz. It was sort of, I felt like I'd hit some sort of, peak of momentum in my entire career. So then I broke my arm by riding my bike into a car door and just finished the whole thing overnight.
But the point was that the accident, as I understand, did happen.
It happened just off. It happened on Johnson Street, which is just off the 86 tram route, and I broke my humerus.
Right. So between the fact that it happened on the 86 route and you broke your humerus during a comedy festival, it seemed to me that there just weren't enough puns for them to get into all the headlines.
Totally. The publicist just exploded. Said, "This is irony. This is irony gone too far."
And I think you made maybe even international odd spots.
Yeah, I was like the, end of the news in Germany.
So which one's the humerus?
It's right at the top of your shoulder. It's the greater tuberosity of the humerus for any physicians at home. It's a tricky one. I'm still getting physio and whatnot.
And does the expression funny bone come from the fact that it's at the end of your humerus?
I'm not entirely sure.
Or is that a total coincidence?
Just a coincidence that it's like, anyway, sorry about that. That's sidelined you a little there.
Lesson for the day.
But, I have to say, this show, you had to cut the season short. I think you did win some kind of award for it, did you not?
I got the Director's Choice Award, which is nice, which, said it wasn't given out of pity.
Right.
Which is comforting to hear.
And you weren't able to play the guitar.
Nah.
How long did that go on for?
Oh, I don't know. When you break your arm as a kid, it's kind of all right.
It's fun.
You get a car signed at school and mum looks after you. But when you're in your 20s, you're just rattling around a share house with a can of soup, swearing. And in the end, I had Comedy Festival Roadshow on and it was barely healing in time. So I had to have a friend sort of be a guest guitarist. I was sort of standing on stage. realizing that all this time playing guitar was mainly because I don't know what to do with my hands on stage.
That was right.
I had someone covering for me.
How did that go? Did they have to learn all the songs?
Awkwardly. I was in Broken Hill, which is a difficult gig to begin with. But then, we had to rehearse all the songs together. And
how does Broken Hill, you are, I would think, almost quintessentially northern suburbs of Melbourne. Like, you wear op shop clothes. And
I'm not a hipster, though. Like,
nobody's accusing you of that.
No,
but I'm indie. It's a big difference. I can't tell you what it is.
But I was thinking that Broken Hill may not have seen you.
Yeah, you have to change your references pretty quick, Smart.
Yeah.
Well, for people who don't know, the Comedy Festival Roadshow is where just a bunch of people from the Comedy Festival, how many, eight acts?
Yeah, it's like five.
And how long does everyone have to do?
Yeah, you get 10 or 15. It's a variety night. It's the best of.
It's a variety night. And how do
and it's
you...
All, it's always people, usually people like me, that have never been on TV. It's sort of like, you know, you just get up there at the start of the night.
And
cold
how does,
audience.
Was Sam Simmons on your...
Yeah.
How does he go at a Broken Hill sort of audience?
Oh, look, he's got a lot of energy. Like, I think the morning after a gig, we're coming out of a hotel and there's just a dude on a ride-on lawnmower just cruised up to us and just went, "Yeah, mate, I really liked your energy on stage." Then wandered off again. So, you know, they might not get all the references, but they appreciate the general gusto.
Is it, do you hear phrases like character building thrown at you? I mean, is it a tough road to hoe?
It's good for exposure.
And, you know, do you have a sort of an emergency procedure if you're playing? Do you have because I know, I'm not going to name him, but there is quite a well-known local comedian who, when he's touring the outback or country sort of venues where they might not want to hear your smart ass intellectual inner city comedy, he busts out just jokes. He has like a 50-minute set where he just does jokes like you would read in Aussie Post and does a completely alternative version of his own act.
Just becomes Maury Fields.
Just turns into Maury Fields for the night. Do you have a kind of an emergency set that you can break out?
It's usually just self-deprecation gone mad. Just like to the point where I'm basically some tough guy in the audience just abusing myself in front of the audience. Just going, "Hey, Austin Powers, you look like a lesbian." And they love it. I just imagine what they'd call me if we were on the street and I just try and recreate it. Because that's the whole Aussie thing, you know, if you can sort of take the mickey out of yourself. But there's a fine line between that and just blatant self-abuse.
And when you find yourself back in inner city Melbourne, do you just feel like a superhero?
Yeah, but sometimes it wears off. It doesn't wear off, rather. You just sort of find yourself doing this really smutty humour.
Right.
You're still in defensive mode. And then the inner city highfalutin audiences are just going, "What are you doing?" I got gonged off stage the other night.
You got gonged off? Where?
My worst gig in 7 years in Darwin.
Really?
I was 25 minutes into this restaurant gig, and the promoter of the venue has just wandered through the crowd with a dinner gong, ringing it quite passionately and just going, "Enough, enough."
Really?
He's this sort of half Swiss, half German sort of shady character. And I had to stop the gig.
So hang on, this is a show, this is not like a road show.
No,
this is where
just booked.
You're the headline act.
Yeah.
And you got 25 minutes in though, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, totally.
And then he's gonged you off.
He's just called.
So he's the
called
guy.
Time.
He's the guy who called you up in Melbourne and said, "Will you come to Darwin?"
Mm.
And then,
how did he know who you were? Why did he book you in the first place?
He books acts and then sort of sits around drinking until the last minute when you turn up. And he's like, "Oh, you right? Yeah." Well, he goes, passes me a bucket and says, "Just ask for $5 after the gig. That's how you're getting paid." And then I was just flatlining for 20 minutes in front of this audience, and I don't know, sort of said something like, "Screw you, Darwin," and kicked a chair over and started rocking out, trying to entertain myself. And then he's just done that. The great thing was I was trying to avoid him after the gig, and everyone who was there to see me, it was about five or six people a month, they'd come over, and it was sort of like we had a wake for the gig. We all stood around and just in silence and sort of remembered the gig. And then he's come up and in his defence gone, "Look, you know, I've wanted the gong a lot of different acts, but I've just never had a gong before." So that was his way of putting me at ease, I guess, going, "Look, this could have happened to anyone, but
I just happened to have the gong tonight."
Well, yeah, I got
it's
the,
not your fault.
I had gong. A reading where no one came, like not one person.
Really?
And there was a kid in, it was at a large chain bookstore, and a kid came over to buy a book, but I was there to read my book to any kids that might turn up. But that kid hadn't come over for my reading. And that you could see the organisers of me coming along for the reading were trying to nail or trying to buttonhole this six-year-old to sit there and have me read to her. That was humiliating.
Well, at least, I mean, if there was one person there, though, you would have had to have...
fulfilled the obligation.
That's right.
But the thing is, I think I did end up reading it to this one kid and neither of us were happy.
Right,
the kid had been buttonholed and I felt embarrassed.
Well, Darwin, I mean, it's an interesting town, Darwin. It's got my favourite big men's store, Darwin's shop, called The Portly Gentleman. That's what it's called. They're not sort of, at least with, I guess I shouldn't name any real big men's stores, but most of them aren't that blatant, really, are they?
No.
The Portly Gentleman. I like the idea that the person answering the phone has to say The Portly Gentleman, as though they might be The Portly Gentleman themselves. Now, because we're telling stories of gigs gone wrong, I'm, in effect, creating a very poor impression of your show, Songs from the Number 86 Tram.
Yeah, see, this is it's all that Aussie self-deprecating thing. I've got to come on and just play myself down as much as
I can. The director's choice. I mean, they don't just choose anyone, do they?
I saw it. It wasn't gonged the night I saw it, I will say that much.
No.
Are you in the process of doing an album, a soundtrack album?
Yeah, I'm doing the album of the show.
Right.
Basically, you know, I've done lots of, I've done Melbourne Comedy Festival before and done gig shows, which is just, you know, a bunch of songs, a few jokes, not putting that much sort of connection to it. But this one I tried to, you know, give it a real beginning, middle and end and try to time it so that the demographic of characters I'm doing coincides with the area the tram's going through.
Oh, it works a treat.
So you get some more Bogan character out, it's sort of, you know, Preston Way, and then you've got your Northcote kind of hipster person, then your Collingwood junkie, and then your CBD kind of businessman through to this old man at the end. And so I'm hoping the album that I record might go for, say, 40 minutes, and it could be a concept album where you put it on in Bundoora.
Oh, so you can put it on in your car.
And you can listen, in the tram.
In the tram.
Oh, in the tram itself.
Yeah, unless you wanted to drive along next to the tram.
Sorry. I get trams all the time. I just forgotten that there's such a thing as the iPod. The only place I listen to music is in my car.
That was a product.
Imagine if you got to the point where you sort of felt like you were too big or famous to ride on the tram, but you still wanted to have that experience of mixing with people. So you just drove along beside stopping along the way,
waving,
just looking over, just going, oh, I'm here with you in spirit.
Well, I'm one of these people who I very rarely get recognised as myself. I will get accused quite aggressively on occasion of being Andrew Denton. And there's really very little resemblance beyond nerdishness and glasses, but I will, you know, occasionally I will have to be Andrew Denton. They just won't buy it, so I'll have to sit them down, put a hand on their knee and say, please tell me about your father. And then they think I am Andrew Denton on an episode of Enough Rope. You've got a guitar with you, Justin. What are you going to play, something from the show or something from your vast catalogue?
Something from the show.
Oh, yes, please.
All right.
Take it away.
I come from a place very far away. I moved there to escape a place of great violence and poverty, Collingwood. I like Melbourne, but feel that I am judged by my colour, the colour of my scarf. I went with red and black, but it is the same here as in my homeland. No one likes the bombers. I recently gained permanent residency. Kevin Rudd has made the process more relaxed. I had to learn about crab sticks, the word reckon, and listen to UMI's early stuff. I am trying to learn more about Australian culture. My friend described it as basically America with Milo and possums. There are many misconceptions about my continent. If we see a Coke bottle, we do not freak out. And no animal is voiced by Chris Rock. There are many
language differences here. A pot is a beer, a drumstick is an ice cream, and God is a disgraced footballer. I tried to text a relative. I said, hello, aunt, but it came out very different. I recently watched Baz Luhrmann's Australia, but I learned more from the castle. I hope one day to go to Bonnie Doon's. But if home is where the heart is, then I wear my heart on my sleeve. So everyone is welcome to visit.
That is the bedroom philosopher Justin Hazelwood is with us. That's a song from his show, which is at the Fringe Festival, Songs from the 86 Tram. What venue are you doing it in this time, Justin?
It will be in the Lithuanian Club.
What is the Lithuanian Club?
It's a place for Lithuanian people and their friends and associates of any denomination.
And where is that? not in Lithuania,
Lithuania
obviously.
Boulevard, Errol Street.
The Lithuanian district.
North Melbourne.
Of course. And when do you open?
October 3 till 10.
October 3 till 10. And some people may, I guess, know you from... Did you have a hit single, or is there such a thing possible these days?
I'm like the sort of indie Joe Dolce. I had I had a sort of, I got number 72 in Triple J's Hottest 100.
Wow.
In 2006.
Was that before it was corrupt? Oh, sorry, I'm not allowed to say that.
Oh, no.
There was something on Crikey.
Are you against...
Dinner.
Is there anything you hate against, Tony?
I'm against it all.
You're just slamming them left, right and centre.
Stand back.
Nobody's safe.
Coming to get you, people. Stand back.
Yeah, I'm Supposed Modern, which is a great song, which has 35 verses and no chorus. And I'm not sick of it.
Number
and
72.
No one else is either. Yeah, I beat Bright Eyes, I beat Beck. I was very pleased.
Losers.
Totally.
With that song, Sudan, where would you match that up to on the road?
Thinking of calling it, maybe you could help me out, because I don't know how to name these songs, because I don't really have names.
But you're on the album cover.
I'm thinking Refugee Song, in a tribute to Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin.
That's all right. That works.
I could just call it Sudan. But what is your question, sorry, Tony?
I was just wondering where it would match up on the 86 route. Whereabouts in the show?
Does
it play?
I'm thinking more out, sort of, I think it's between Bundoora, Preston Way, sort of more out of the city a bit.
Yeah, okay.
I had a lot of trouble writing that. Like, because I've never, all my stuff's normally kind of just a bit sort of, yeah, whatever, sort of ironic. Kind of about being me and being awkward and being from Tasmania or whatever. But I was trying to write. I thought if I don't do any sort of... There's so many people from different cultures on the tram. Like, if I just put it in the too hard basket and don't have some sort of foreign person, then it's almost... That's almost racist in itself, leaving them out.
Well, and you really are tapping into a conversation we had last week about really you've got to be able to do any accent.
Like, this is Tony's theory. It's a controversial one.
Because, of course, people regard, and the key figure, I think, in this whole controversy is Greg Ritchie and Mahatma Coates from the early 90s, who was lambasted he was sneered at by Australians for being perhaps, for feeling a little racially inappropriate. Because he was playing a Pakistani with a
turban.
Well, that would be wrong to start with, wouldn't it?
But I think he was wearing a turban, was he not? And possibly shoe polish.
Exactly.
He got a lot of curry.
So that felt wrong. And so some people think that you can't do an Indian accent or it sounds racist, or you can't do a Chinese accent or it sounds racist. Mm. You've done a song with a Sudanese accent. My theory is that if you therefore can't do an Irish or Scottish accent. You're really stuck with no accents at all other than ones that you're somehow linked to, or you've got to be allowed to do all of them. And so I think I'll back Greg Ritchie to the hilt for what he did in the early 90s. I think his writing was below par, but his right to execute was well, and he was absolutely within his rights.
There is an interesting, I sent you a link today for a review on, there's an excellent, you know, Chortle? Do you ever go to Chortle, the UK comedy website? They have a fantastic review, a guy called Steve Bennett. And he reviews Kevin Bloody Wilson's current tour of the UK. And it's an amazing read. And I won't say too much because it may turn offensive, but well worth a read if you go to the Chortle UK website and look for the review of Kevin Bloody Wilson's current tour. I think the number of people pointing at me means that Tony Delroy is ready to talk the nightlife. Tony, what have you got for us tonight?
No, that's not the reason that we're pointing at you.
Oh, I see. I see. Somebody's written something on my person, have they?
It's okay. It's okay.
What's going on? What's happening?
Speaking of comedy, we're giving away the Tim Minchin DVD as part of the prize pack tonight.
Has he got a new one, has he? Or is that the old one?
Well, it's got a little sticker on there saying winner 2009 best comedy performer.
Is that
that old?
Does it say
the one? The one recorded at the Enmore in Sydney.
So Rock, is it called?
No, it's called Ready for This.
Oh, it's a new one. All right, okay. Mm.
So yeah, we're giving away. So if you happen to win the challenge tonight at midnight, it's yours. We are also planning to talk a little bit about financial services tonight. In just 3 weeks, if you live in Australia, you can qualify as a financial advisor, which I find a little bit disturbing.
Really?
You know, it's okay, you know, if you can become a barista in 3 weeks or a scuba instructor in 3 weeks. But
so I could become a financial advisor in 3 weeks. Is that what you're saying?
That's the story.
Okay, well, I'm going to be tuning in for this.
Indeed, and it's just one of those things where, you know, after Storm Financial and a few of the things that happened during the giant financial collapse we've just experienced, perhaps there should be a little more regulation in the industry, do you think?
Was it the 12th anniversary? You were talking about the 12th anniversary of Lehman Brothers, weren't you?
Yep. That was 12-month anniversary, yep.
I was trying to get a song collapse for them. All I could come up with was Unravelling All on the Monetary Side, that's the Lehman Brothers. I was up all night trying to make that work.
Very cute.
But I missed the 12th anniversary. I can't really use it now.
Oh,
sorry, what else is happening?
Best of. Well, we'll save it for the 24-month anniversary.
Bring it
out. ASIC wants financial planners to forego commissions. It's a very big money spinner. They're not going to be happy if they're going to be forced into that.
No.
Nick Bruning, anyway, is in tonight, and we're going to be talking about a few issues that relate directly to your finances. Pretty good news from the super side of the equation, because it appears that between about March and August, September, we've seen something like about a 30-40% increase, and most of the funds have actually shown some life for the first time in a couple of years. So Nick, we'll talk a little bit about financial advice and the like immediately post 10 tonight. We're also going to talk about your relationship with your dog.
Oh, yes.
Apparently it's been revealed that it is the geneticist's best friend.
What does that mean?
Well, they've only just recently done the genome of the dog. They completed that in 2005, and the human genome was mapped in 2001. So, in other words, we know exactly what the genes do. Cats are still a complete mystery, so we don't know anything about them. But the dog we know a little bit about. And the reason why it's important is because there are 440 inherited diseases that have been identified in dogs and 6,000 in people. And because with pedigree dogs, they have very pure lines, it's easier to track exactly which gene is responsible for which disease. And as we share a number of conditions together, in fact, in the top 10 diseases that impact us, cancer, epilepsy, allergy, and heart disease, they all happen in dogs.
So we can just copy the dog map.
Well, essentially what we're going to do is you can get very pure lines of dogs. You can do tests on them and work out exactly a decent cure for these diseases. And it can also relate to the way we treat humans for those particular conditions as well. Much easier. You know, if you did it on humans, it'd be because of the way we obviously don't kiss cousins, and so therefore we tend to marry widely. You know, the lines aren't pure. But with pedigree dogs, they are very pure. And so therefore it's easier to track down exactly what's causing the problem. and then we can relate it across to the human condition.
And will you be
making any sense? Will you? I don't understand it myself. But
I'd like to think you'll be mapping different animal genomes every night, perhaps on the nightlife. Get through them all.
It's a situation where there's about 90% of the dog has shared genes with humans. Mm. So that's pretty, and we live in the same conditions.
And obviously. I often like to drink out of the toilet, so that explains that.
Yes, some of us start to look a little bit like our pets as well. Well, remarkably,
there's a lot happening tonight on the nightlife.
Oh yeah, we've got movies as well. We're going to talk a little bit about 500 Days of Summer and Up. Which I haven't seen yet, but everyone says it's terrific.
Apparently it's brilliant.
All of that, and we are going to have a challenge and an issue and stuff and do our best after 10.
Wow, as long as you're not...
We've got a plan.
As long as you're not doing Derek's quiz, we'll be happy. Thank you very much, Tony. That's The Nightlife, and that's after 10 on 774.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's absolutely true. I can confirm that information. And with us is Justin Hazelwood. You may know him as the Bedroom Philosopher. His show, Songs from the 86 Tram, is opening on the 3rd of October at the Lithuanian Club. And I urge you to get along and see that. I saw it at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. It is a top night out. Justin, do you think you would have anything to learn from the life and style of Frank Sinatra? Do you know much about Frank Sinatra?
Oh, I think I saw a documentary on him once.
Really? Was he punching guys out? Was he...
Yeah, he's always involved with the mob a fair bit.
I think he was involved with the mob. Well, everybody was really involved with the mob in the early days of show business. Soupy Sales, Don Knotts, they were all corrupt, obviously.
Was he like, Elvis used to love giving away cars to his friends to alleviate the guilt of his fame?
He'd always be
giving away amazing Cadillacs.
Yeah, like, right.
If someone did his shopping for him, he'd get a couple of Cadillacs. That's how he'd pay people. I wonder if Frank Sinatra was equally generous?
He was incredibly generous. Frank would pay for operations for people he barely knew and things like that. And he also had a bunch of guys, tough guys, that would just go around with him. And they had a process called duking, which is where you would have a $100 bill and it was sort of folded into a kind of triangle shape that was sort of palmed, and they would always have a couple of those just in the hands. And Frank would see someone and he'd say to one of his sidekicks, "Duke that guy." And then he'd just sort of touch the guy, and then the guy would have $100 on his purse. They couldn't get in somewhere. "Duke those two guys."
That's great.
And you just duke your way into somewhere. But yeah, Frank was a very generous man, and we love to play a bit of Frank every night. I know you're going to ask me to tell the story, aren't you?
Well, maybe I'll get to tell it when we come back from the song, but I was going to... Did he ever run into financial difficulties with that sort of generous, or is he just making so much cash?
I'm Duke that guy. We need those $100 back.
That's right. He needs to be reduked. But they, Frank sort of, went up and then he went down at the beginning of the 50s, and then he had the most famous comeback of all time, really, in the history of show business. And I don't think he had too much trouble finding money to finance the duking lifestyle after From Here to Eternity came out and the hit of a string of amazing hit albums on the Capitol label. We're not going to be playing a Capitol track tonight. I've gone for Frank's first album on his own label, Reprise, Ring-a-Ding-Ding. It's a phrase that... That Frank coined, Justin. See, that's what you need to do, is you need to get some sort of hip speak, introduce some phrases to the language, ring-a-ding-ding.
Yep.
Come up with a phrase that you sort of coin in one of your shows. People take it away.
I made up the word pooglet.
Pooglet?
Is that getting there, what you mean?
That's pretty good.
And it means, it doesn't really mean anything, but you can, my phrase is get a wriggle on pooglets.
That's pretty good.
Where I just call the audience pooglets.
Introduce a word, to sort of introduce like a tagged salmon, word into the lexicon, I find. I've been trying for years. My favourite word almost ever is shambolic. Don't you just love that word?
Terrific.
It's beautiful.
My version of that is debacular, of a debacle. And I occasionally will say the word, "That was debacular."
I was thinking, "I am debacular. I'm a very disorganized vampire."
See, that's working against me. That's where debacular has not taken off. We have a track, because we're trying not to play the hit singles, the Witchcrafts, the All the Ways, the obvious ones. So from Ring-a-Ding-Ding, here's You'd Be So Easy to Love.
You'd be so easy. Easy to love.
That's Frank Sinatra. Of course it is, from the album Ring-a-Ding-Ding, You'd Be So Easy to Love. And we've just had an SMS. I'm with Tony Wilson, of course, as you know, and Justin Hazelwood, the bedroom philosopher, sitting in also. Can any of you tell me where I can buy a mankini? Now, is that a real thing, or is that just something from the Borat film? Can you really, can you buy them? Is everyone on mic, should I just say? Hello? Pushing the right buttons, yeah. Pardon me.
I can't help Pete at all. Pete, who's after a mankini. Not only is it against ABC policy to promote mankini shops by name... This is the first I've ever heard of the word mankini.
Justin Hazelwood, you would never be seen in a mankini, I'm imagining.
No, no. Possibly, I don't know.
No, of course you wouldn't.
No. But you could eBay, I suppose.
I guess you could. I think that's... I'm not sure if there's really mankini shops.
Get online is the suggestion coming through from Pete Dillon, our producer. Just plug mankini into your favourite search engine and you'll be in one within about 4 hours, I think, is the gist of that. Excellent. Now hey, I've got a question about...
Come on, say it.
I've been angling towards it all week. The last scene of Bad Eggs, film that Tony Martin wrote...
A lot of people hate it. I'm prepared to accept that. A lot of people like it. A lot of people hate it.
Great film. The last scene has a Frank Sinatra song in it. It plays into the credits, I believe, even.
I've been told, yes, well, it's Where or When. It's not the original kind of depressing... Gordon Jenkins' arrangement of Where or When. It's the upbeat swinging version from the Live at the Sands album with Count Basie.
Now, I heard, well, before I met you, that it was probably a story directed at your eccentricity and your sense of perfection, that was the song that was going to go there and you were going to get it, and that you set Australian records for the purchase of
I'm told that is the most expensive purchase of a piece of music for an Australian film, but I wanted it particularly because it is an example, it's a very subtle example of what the film itself was doing, which is taking something serious and turgid and doing a light version of it. It's Frank kind of swinging up something that would normally be quite serious and depressing.
So how does someone buy a Frank Sinatra song?
Well, there's only one way. And Justin, you might want to write this name down. If you ever have to buy a Frank Sinatra song, Bert Finkelstein is the man you call. He is the official lawyer to the Sinatra family. He's the only guy you can call to get a Frank Sinatra song. And there's one price for everybody. I won't say what it is, but it's heaps of money. It's more money than you can ever imagine. And, you know, we called him up and we said, Bert, Mr. Finkelstein, you know, this is a low-budget Australian film. And he goes in doing what was a pretty good Frank Sinatra impression, I thought. He goes, you might be making a low-budget movie. We ain't making low-budget music. And so we had to pay. The great thing was, though, or the bad thing initially, is it was 2002, 2003. So it was when, do you remember when the Australian dollar was like 49 cents?
Yeah.
So it was like this insane amount of money times two. And so we had to write a check for this incredible amount of money. And I was putting some of my own money into it as well. And then the Aussie dollar started to go up. And so the producer of the film, a man called Stephen Luby, came in. He said, I haven't written the check yet, because it was like, you know, when the roulette wheel hasn't stopped spinning. And he's gone, hang on, we've just saved $5,500. And then it went up a bit more. And then you come in the next day, he's going, we've now saved 15 grand. And like the Aussie dollar kept going up to like 57 cents. We saved like something like $50,000. And we needed that money for the extremely elaborate DVD of the movie that I was planning. So if that reversal hadn't have happened, well, there wouldn't have been so many unnecessary special features on the DVD. Sorry, that was quite a long story. But yeah, let me just say that's the process you have to go through. You have to talk to Bert Finkelstein if you need any Sinatra music for whatever reason.
Were there any clauses about what kind of footage can't go over a Sinatra?
That's the thing. There was nobody at any point asked to see a script. Yeah. Like, so I was going, you know, there's the famous
You're
story.
Making a really arty porn.
It could have been something like that. They just wanted the cash. We just wanted the money. But it was like, you know, I kept thinking of Singing in the Rain, the way it was used in Clockwork Orange, because that deal was struck with nobody ever bothering to read the script of Clockwork Orange. And I think from that day on, it was like, maybe you should have a look at what they're going to do with it. But at no point did anybody ask. We are getting SMSs galore. Mark from Craigieburn has invented a word, confusalage. That's quite a good word.
Like it.
Bonnie from Warrandyte says, I like to use the word debauchery, so sadly often appropriate for me. Mankini news, Tony Wilson. Check it out.
At Vic Market, you may be able to find a mankini.
A leather one.
Traffic report, Monash inbound heavy, maybe because of the roadworks on the West Gate. That's got nothing to do with mankini. Sorry, slightly confused there. Justin Hazelwood, the bedroom philosopher, is with us here on 774 tonight and ABC Victoria. Your most recent album was called Brown and Orange. What was the thinking behind that?
Oh, it just makes some really sort of overwrought, overconvoluted. Oh, see, I'm doing it again. I'm putting myself down.
I think you're certainly on the right track there.
It's a difficult second album. I heard some sitars on a Beatles track, and it's when I want sitars.
You've gone sitar crazy on this album.
I was like a kid in a toy shop in the studio. I just went, what's that? Is that a harp? I want harps. I want trumpets. I want violins. I want banjos. And so it was just a bit of an instrument fest, when in fact it's supposed to be maybe a musical comedy album, but because I'm sort of a frustrated musician deep down, I took it as an excuse to... You know, go look at me, I'm the next Josh Pike, but with jokes.
Well, there's quite a lot going on this album. Tell us, I think this story has been told a few times before, but tell us about the cassette you found.
Well, because overall, I guess it got some sort of 70s theme, because I'm a bit 70s obsessed. And I was in a Canberra op shop in the Salvation Army, and I found this collection of cassettes that belonged to this guy called Charles, who lived in the 70s, and it was basically an abandoned collection of tapes, all labelled with things like Dad 1975, Maxine 1976, and it was recordings either made of his family with him there in the room, or letters that he'd given to friends on cassette and letters they'd sent back to him. Which it was amazing in itself. They were in really good condition. He was this really idiosyncratic, kind of charismatic character. And the weird thing is, that's exactly what I used to do as a kid. I used to record my family a lot, and I have stacks and stacks of tapes and field recordings. And
see, I have cassettes from the 70s as well. They don't play anymore. So, that's pretty... It's pretty impressive that they're still working.
Still in good, because so many things can happen to them. But one of the particular tapes was labelled Social Life in the Psychiatric Unit, 10th to the 3rd, 77. And it was him in a psychiatric hospital, of which he was a patient, in the UK, I think, just wandering around with a tape recorder asking other patients if they'd heard any good jokes. Yes. And then at one point, him just having this really amazing kind of profound conversation with a woman about... which, you know, just about love and life and pain and how she's got a crush on him. And it's the most incredible thing. It just sounds like this is written by, I don't know, like Wes Anderson or David Linklater or something, and acted by these amazing people, and it's the sounds of trolleys and other patients in the background. And it's just this incredible discovery. And on one of the tapes, he mentioned some cousins that he lived with in New Zealand. So I got Googling and tracked them down and emailed them. Tracked them down to a gallery in New Zealand and went, oh, hi, look, I don't suppose you're the, you know, Sophie Bidwill. And it was. I found his family that he was staying with, and basically I'm piecing together his history through this. And unfortunately, he died not long after the tapes were made in the UK. And it looks like his mother, who's now in Canberra, just abandoned this tape collection, and I just stumbled upon it. So I sort of asked them for permission to use the tapes, and on three of the tracks off this album, I've got fairly large segments with a bit of music underneath it. And I mean, I think there's a bigger project I'd still like to do with them, because they're just amazing.
Well, the conversations are kind of threaded throughout the album and with accompanying music. That's the album we're talking about, is Brown and Orange by the Bedroom Philosopher. We're going to play a track from that album now, not one of the tracks we've just been talking about. This is called... Oh, now, I should just warn you, it's getting late. It's 12 minutes to 10 by the clock I'm looking at. We're all grown-ups. I think we can handle the fact that the S word is used in this song. It's not used in an abusive way. It's used in a way that I think our Prime Minister would describe as robust. So here we go. You have been warned. The name of the track is What Am I Supposed to Be Doing?
7 a.m. I wake up, 4 p.m. I'm still stuck on the edge of my bed like a hood ornament in pajamas. I should have a shower or breakfast at least, but I think we're out of milk. There's only crusts left and I don't want any more hairs on my chest. I know I had really grand plans for today, but I'm a snooze button junkie getting high on delay. Morning is well and truly broken, and Cat Stevens has changed his name. And I got six different things to do lists sitting around my room. Please tell me, what am I supposed to be doing? What am I supposed to be doing? I got emails to not reply to and calls to put off making and bills to suppress and some appointment to think briefly about, but then I can't find that bit of paper. I got resumes to print out and write lyrics on the back of, washing to orbit my room with, and gigs to think hard about, probably never getting around to ever actually looking. You know, I dream of genie in my water bottle, someone specialising in admin and PR to come along and start kissing me slowly behind the neck, you know, getting me gigs and shit, cause I got six different things to do lists sitting around my room. Please tell me, what am I supposed to be doing? What am I supposed to be doing? Cause life offers you more choices in some way. I don't know what salads or dressings I want on my sandwich of destiny. I could start a novel, start a charity, start a small business course, take the first baby steps towards starting a multinational global franchise corporation. I could just have a ciggy and a cup of tea. What am I supposed to be doing? PM, yeah, where's the day gone? I didn't get my things to do list done, but I did make a mixtape for my cousin.
And that tells us that the track is over. That was What Am I Supposed to Be Doing? The Bedroom Philosopher from his most recent album, Brown and Orange.
Producer just rewinding my tape so he can give it back to me.
It's a good sound.
Very efficient.
I loved hearing that sound in my car. That's right, listening in my car. Just going, I haven't heard a cassette.
It's, yeah.
Being rewound.
It's nostalgic.
For so long. Michael Veitch, you guys would know who Michael Veitch is, of course.
Yes, from the ABC Sunday Arts program.
He's always
fast
been...
Fast forward.
And fast forward.
He's always been a champion of old technology, and I'm sure he won't mind me telling this story, but I was walking with him back to his car recently, and on the back seat of the car, there was just a whole lot of cassettes. And I said, what are you doing with cassettes in your car? And have you got a tape player? He's going, yeah, I've just got a new cassette player installed in my car.
Wow.
And I've gone, well, does anyone still make them? And he's gone, there's one place that still makes them in Hobart. So he had it shipped over.
Probably Marantz.
And, well, possibly. I said, why would you want that? And he goes, grey cassettes at garage sales. That's where he lurks around garage sales, finding presumably the same sort of material you found.
Tony Martin showed me that the original cut or the director's cut of the film Almost Famous.
Yes, called Untitled.
Untitled. And the editor or the key person at Rolling Stone magazine, Ben Fong Torres, is that his name?
Yeah.
He has a great line in that film where he says, yeah, we're going to send it by Mojo Machine. It's this fantastic new machine. It comes across in just 19 minutes a page.
It's like an early fax machine.
It must be pre-telex. I've never heard of the Mojo Machine.
Well, speaking of technology, we must pause this conversation for a moment. Peter Newham is...
Newham.
I'm sorry, Peter. I'm sorry. It's got. I can't even say that it's got Newham written on my screen and blame somebody else. It says Newham. I apologise for that.
That's all right. I thought you were going to throw it to me and with a link to Mojo, but a link to technology.
Have you got a Mojo machine down there at the bureau?
What do you reckon? Probably not.
Okay.
Maybe that's what we're missing.
Tell us about these storm fronts. What's going on?
Yeah, well, we have a whole bunch of warnings out for northern and eastern Victoria, and that's due to a low-pressure system that's just north of the state, and that's going to move across the northeast tonight and intensify just east of Victoria. So a quick summary of the warnings. We've got a flood watch still out for the northeast river catchments, and we didn't quite get enough rain last night to result in flooding, but that's a significant risk tonight, so we may have to upgrade those to warnings during the morning. Also, severe weather warnings for damaging winds and flash flooding over the northern and eastern districts. So, look, the rain bands currently across the northwest, and there's been 5 to 10 millimetres in the Mallee in the last couple of hours, and there's some pretty significant thunderstorms look like moving in over the northeastern Victoria in the next couple of hours. So rain areas mostly affecting the north and east with some locally heavy falls, and hence those warnings are out. And then during the course of tomorrow, the rain will contract eastwards and we'll be left with isolated showers across Victoria. So a bit like today in that most of the rain will be occurring overnight during the early morning, and then the day during daylight hours there won't be a great deal of shower activity left.
Are you going to be getting out, if it comes towards the Bureau, this storm front, will you guys be out performing elaborate musical numbers?
Oh, I don't think so,
okay,
no.
Okay, sorry. Just a notion that popped into my head. I should never have said it.
Oh, it's mojo and all that thrown in, yeah.
Sorry, it's appalling behaviour. There'll be a meeting after this broadcast.
Tony's a very big Gene Kelly fan, and there aren't many conversations where he doesn't picture Gene with the umbrella flapping around his feet. And so I guess when you guys talk weather, he often goes in that direction.
Fair enough.
Melbourne, any excitement for Melbourne?
Looks like this rain band will miss us, just a few showers overnight and tomorrow, maximum temperature of about 17 tomorrow with quite fresh southwesterly winds, and we'll have strong wind warnings or gale warnings out for coastal waters as a result of those strong southwesterlies. Then similar trend for Thursday and Friday, just a few showers each day, maximums of 18. And at this stage, it still looks like there'll be a few showers around on grand final day and quite windy with the chance of hail and thunder and a maximum of 15. So that still looks like occurring for grand final day, and just fingers crossed it's a bit better than we're forecasting.
All right. Well, thank you, Peter. Will you be here tomorrow night?
No, it's not me. I'll tell them to work on their dancing before then.
Yeah, and if they could send the name through early so that I can do some rehearsals.
Practice, yeah.
We'll get him to sound it out tomorrow night. It'll be great.
No
Thank
worries.
You, Peter. Cheers.
Okay.
Justin, once again, the Lithuanian Club, whereabouts is it?
Errol Street, North Melbourne, Melbourne Fringe Festival. Doing a show, Songs from the 86 Tram.
That's right. And what about the album of that? When will that be in the shops?
Oh, yeah, ASAP.
Good. Good to hear.
Get it out on Dino Records.
Dino Records. Are they still going?
I don't know. Get out on tape.
What about the Fable label? Which, you know, that's a label I used to enjoy. The Fringe Festival, does it feel to you like there's more and more comedy every year?
Oh, look, it's just outrageous. Yeah, I'm getting so many Facebook invites.
Well, you know, I remember when it was, you know, people were just hanging by their nipples from the ceiling. I mean, now it's pretty much half the comedy festival seems to be trying out there. I guess it's a good place to try out a show.
Yeah, I noticed Rove's in the Fringe Festival.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's like just listed as a free event, which is interesting.
Doesn't sound like him. What about the comedy festival next year? I remember you telling me once that you've got. You don't obviously spoil anything that maybe is still percolating up top, but yeah. You're working on a big show for
a lot
next
of
year.
John Howard jokes.
Yeah, John Howard jokes.
It's retro. No one's doing them.
Bring it back.
But I want to do a show in there.
Lime Champions, that's obviously on another network, which I won't... Well, it's Community Radio.
Network.
It's Triple R, of course, supplying talent for all of the other radio stations in town at some point.
You're basically the last show left writing sketches.
I guess people probably might not have tuned in, but we've basically this year been... just doing a sketch radio comedy show.
It's 1 hour of sketches, and I have to say, I mean, not many people are going to that much effort on radio. Let's put it that way, politely. Is it hard work?
It's sort of enormous. There's four of us, and we basically write a bunch of stuff, go in and record it, then take it home and produce it. So just go to some free sound effects sites on the internet and put a bit of ambience and sound effects on it and come in and sort of sequence them live. But it's good. I think,
What do you mean free? Are there free sound effects?
There is a really
sites on the internet.
One called Freesound, I think it is. Yeah, you just type in anything. And
bloke falling down a flight of stairs.
I'd actually think I'd like to join a community of, field recordists. Because I've been, you know, I'm waiting at the airport, right? And I go, if I had my digital recorder with me, I could just record this and, you know, go home. And I'd just like to spend my idle times recording sound and then putting it up on the net for anyone to be able to use.
It's good. Well, my hero when I was a kid was a man called Ben Burtt, who I saw on one of the making of Star Wars documentaries. And he would just wander around with his tape recorder. I always remember the footage, and Star Wars nerds would remember him just hitting the sort of, what are they called, wires that hold the power lines up. We're hitting it with a bolt, just hitting it with a metal bolt and making this sound. Pew! And that was Han Solo's gun. And I just went, that's the job I want.
Yeah.
Walking around with a tape recorder recording rubbish. Justin, thank you for sitting in for an entire hour here on Evenings at 774.
Pleasure.
And your fine album, Brown and Orange, is in the shops now, Tony. We're back to do it all over again tomorrow.
Yes, we'll see you then.
And Tony Delroy is yet another Tony in next with The Nightlife. That's after the news. Cheers.